We'll do it live! Fuck it!
Yep, that's a high point of the show for me.
That's how you talk when you have kids who are 3 and 8 years old. Everything's spooky.
Oh, okay, I see.
How you doing?
I'm all right. I hurt my foot.
Doing what?
Fucking dogs have these bones. And
like in their bodies, or the kind they eat,
like rawhide. No, like not rawhide. These are like big old solid, like real cow bones, and like one of them was underneath a blanket, and I stepped on the blanket last night and just gouged my foot, and I have this big cut there,
like on the bottom of it.
Yeah,
yeah, that sucks.
And then this morning, as I was walking down the stairs, I was trying to avoid walking on the cut, and then as I came down, I twisted my ankle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you were compensating for something else and walking weird. It's like you hurt one foot, then you hurt the other because you're walking weird.
Yeah, fucking dogs.
Yeah, not a good decision.
No, I'm gonna kill them later.
I like that you've come around to my line of thinking.
Yeah, you're a monster of a man.
Terrible person. I just don't like Puggles. And otherwise, I'm fairly pleasant.
Why do you have one?
My wife wanted a dog. We got it before we had kids, and she's never like improved from being. I guess she's a little better than when she was a puppy. But last night I came home, she ate a pillow on her bed. Just like took it off the bed, just massacred on the floor in our bedroom. No apparent reason. Just decided to.
Awesome.
Yeah, it never ends. And I've had dogs all my life. I've never had a dog like a Puggle, ever. We had 5 litters of puppies and sold all the puppies. I've never seen a dog like this Puggle. Like, I've had dogs all my life, and she makes me never want to have a dog again.
Yeah, I think I'm done after these two are gone. It would just go downhill. That's what I'm saying. It would just go downhill.
Well, we were you and I were off last week. I had to pick up my brother in Boston, so that there was no show last week on halfguarded.com for MMA and stuff. You did a writing podcast. I listened to a bit of.
Yeah, with my brother. Well, it's going to change a lot, actually. The last half of the podcast got better. The first half just pure shit.
Yeah. It kind of reminded me of that podcast you talk about a lot, where they do the history thing. Yeah,
actually, my brother brought that in at the end, and we both agreed that worked a lot better. So we're going to basically be doing like a dollop version, but it's just going to be authors. My brother's going to find authors, and then we'll talk about like how it can tie into writing and things like that, because he wants to talk a lot about writing. So that's what it's going to be.
Okay, you sound excited for it.
I'm just a bucket of enthusiasm. My cup spilleth over.
Well, since we missed last week's show, we should just touch on, even though it's old news a week and a half ago, UFC 210.
That's fine with me. I didn't touch on it yet.
Because for me personally, this is like my favorite show ever. And here's why. It's like a total microcosm of what MMA is in 2017. Like, just all the most bizarre things surrounding this event happened prior to the show, during the show, and after the show, where it's just like, why in 2017 can you have so many shows go smoothly? You know, everybody makes weight. There's no weird reffing decisions. The matchmaking makes sense, and everything comes together sometimes. But then you can have a show like UFC 210 where you have the main event of Daniel Cormier and Rumble Johnson, both guys weighing in within 5 minutes of like closing time. You have to weigh in by 11 a.m. Cormier shows up at 10:55, is 1.2 pounds overweight, leaves for 2.5 minutes, comes back, weighs in again, makes 205 pounds. Then Rumble Johnson comes in with 1 minute left and weighs 200, 203.8. So that, and there's all this controversy about how Cormier weighed in, and Rumble Johnson's going to, like, not file a lawsuit, but is lodging a complaint with the New York State Athletic Commission because Cormier, I don't want to say clearly leaned on the towel, but it looked very suspicious how he weighed in and managed to lose a pound in 2 minutes. I don't know how you do that. He claims the scale was faulty. And then also at the weigh-ins, we had Pearl, what's her last name? Rodriguez Gonzalez something. Pearl weighed in.
Gonzalez, you fucking racist.
I'm sorry, Gonzalez. I told you I wasn't fully prepped on this show. Anyway, so Pearl Gonzalez weighs in, makes weight. She's going to face Cynthia Calvillo later, you know, over the weekend. And she gets pulled from the show because she has breast implants, which has never happened ever in MMA as far as I know. Even in New York State, there's been women who have fought with breast implants. So they pull her from the show. Then inexplicably, like 6 hours later, she's back on the card with really no explanation.
You know how fucked
that was just like, that was just the weigh-in.
Well, think about
that just even touched the show or anything else.
How fucked up is that? Is that in MMA, they tried to call a fight off because a woman had breast implants, but we've had other states where a chick had a dick and they let him fight. What the fuck?
Yeah, it was very weird. What did you make of the Cormier weigh-in? Do you think he was leaning on the towel? Did you find that shady, or am I like an Eddie Bravo conspiracy theorist?
You're not. I mean, there's conspiracy theorists, and then there's Eddie Bravo. I mean, oh man. I'm sure there's something to it. I don't want to say there wasn't, but at the same time, I feel like the way the towel is being held, like you'd have to put a little bit of, you know, actual pressure on it, and it, somebody would notice it, I think. And I don't know, was it that much weight? Cormier didn't really seem like he was, you know, worried. Like when he missed weight, he looked really genuinely shocked. I don't know. If he cheated, then Johnson should have said something right then and there and not laughed about it. But I give Cormier the benefit of the doubt, especially when Johnson came in under the exact same amount. Like, I think it's far more likely that somebody reconfigured the scale or did something than Cormier did anything, because if he did it, then Johnson's weight should have been normal, and his was, again, 1.2 pounds under, and you can't imagine he miscut by that much also. So I think it's probably much ado about nothing.
So I'm presuming you don't think Johnson's appeal will go anywhere. He's trying to get 20% of Cormier's purse because, in theory, Cormier missed weight.
One, I don't think he's going to succeed, because I have a feeling that he would have had to fight under protest. And more than that, what are you going to do, convince the Athletic Commission that they were wrong? Like, this isn't like changing the, you know, referee's judgment call, in which the commission can be like, well, we're the commissioners, blah, blah, blah. It's like, the commission is the one that did the weigh-in. It's the commissioner and the you know, suit and tie people. They're the ones who were asked to screw up if there was any screw up at the weigh-ins. And they're not going to, you know, say, yeah, we really screwed up, and what are they? We screwed up, so we're gonna find that guy. Yeah, it's horseshit. Because, you know, you can't do that to Cormier. Because Cormier, maybe he would have said, "Well, I didn't know that. You know, I should have. I wouldn't have touched it or something." I don't know.
Right. He was concerned people would see his ass and junk, is what he said, for pushing the towel down. That was his excuse. Anyway,
so he was afraid the towel, people were going to see him naked, so his solution was to push the towel down?
That's his argument, yep. He said he was just holding it. He wasn't pushing it down.
Was he afraid that he wasn't going to make weight, so then he drinks some water also?
I'm not sure. In the main event of that show, Cormier beat Johnson. We mentioned that. Won by a rear naked choke. Johnson fought a really weird fight for somebody who's like the most fearsome striker in MMA in the world, just knocking dudes out left and right. He decided to just wrestle Cormier and like try and take him down and kind of push him up against the cage. What did you make of Johnson's strategy in that fight?
He's a moron.
Okay, but even if he's a moron, why would you try and wrestle with an Olympic wrestler when you have a history of, like, coming off three straight knockouts against top five guys in the division?
I don't know. I mean,
it's, like, baffling, right?
Yeah. I understand. Okay. There are times when a fighter's in there and something happens and he reverts to his instincts. And sure. If you're Johnson, your instinct is to wrestle. So, you know, you could say, well, he got cracked and got hurt and he went into his instinct or whatever, but he didn't get hit or hurt. It seemed like, okay, first I thought maybe he's just trying to change it up and keep Cormier honest and things like that. Okay, we can deal with that. But then he just kept doing it and doing it and doing it, and it was just like, that was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen, because it's not even like he was in there with, like, a Mirko Krokop striker. He's like, shit, my normal thing isn't going to work. Like, Cormier's not a big power puncher or anything, so, and he knew he could hurt him. He almost did in this fight, and he did in the previous one, so whatever he's doing, all I can think is maybe it being his last fight ever, and he went into the fight thinking it was going to be his last fight ever, that his brain didn't work right. He wasn't fighting like a fighter or something. I don't know. Otherwise, or we could just, it's Anthony Johnson. He's kind of fucking stupid. Let's go with that.
What do you make of his retirement? He, after the fight, he announces retirement, says he's getting out of MMA and has another career that's a big deal and he's going to make big money. Very unusual for a guy, top three in the world at light heavyweight to just retire early 30s. I think he might be 31. Thoughts?
Yeah, especially given that it didn't sound like he was saying I'm retired because, I'm afraid I'm going to get hurt or something. He made a point like I'm going to retire because basically I got something too good to pass up. It's like an offer he couldn't refuse seems to be on his plate the way he's talking about it. And again, nobody,
like, it's gonna be like big money, like he's in the prime of his career still and could have a lot of big fights lined up. He's fought at heavyweight. You would think he could even make middleweight if he got his act together, and like he's got a lot of options still, and especially in a time when the company doesn't have a lot of big name fighters. It's bizarre.
The money there, that's to me like, no, there could be a lot of things you'd rather do in life than fight. But very few of them are going to pay you what the money he's getting right now. Like, you work your whole career to get to this point where you're a regular top draw making minimum six figures no matter what type of guy. And, you're Anthony Johnson. You don't have any real skills in life that market you anywhere else. You're not some brilliant talker or anything like that. Especially not any skills that are going to market you to the same degree that you're going to get paid in MMA. Even if he was really good at math, he's just going to go become a CPA or something and make, 50 grand a year. I don't think so. It's like the only thing that would have made sense to me at all would be pro wrestling. That maybe, he always really dreamed of it and loved it. And he thought, I could make some pretty good money here and I don't get punched in the head. And I could see with the upside in WWE, you could talk yourself into, I could make a couple hundred grand a year doing that. Maybe that is worth it. But I've, obviously there's been no word of that, so I don't know what the hell he's doing.
Speaking of people who don't know what the hell they're doing, in the semi-main event, we had Gegard Mousasi defeating Chris Weidman by TKO. Really weird scene here. It's even hard to, explain it, but essentially, if you go back, there was they changed the definition of what a grounded fighter was. It used to be if you were, in a three-point stance, 2 feet down, one hand down, you were grounded, and an opponent couldn't knee you in the head. So they changed the rule because guys would put the hand down and kind of try and protect themselves that way. So they made it two hands down. So Mousasi threw a couple knees at Weidman when he was really close to having two hands down. And if you watch the replay, it's almost indiscernible. Mousasi kind of lifted Weidman a little bit when he threw one of the knees and kind of took his hand off the mat. But it was so close. I would have been okay if they said it was the other way and it was an illegal blow. But essentially what I think it was Mirgliotta stopped the fight and said it was due to an illegal blow and he was going to give Chris Weidman 5 minutes rest time because of this illegal knee to the head. In the meantime, while that's going on, I guess Big John McCarthy is outside watching the replay of the blow of the knee to Weidman's head and tells Mirgliotta that it was, in fact, a legal blow and Weidman didn't have 4 points of contact. So Mirgliotta comes back into the cage and essentially says, It was a clean shot. It wasn't an illegal blow. At this point, there's also a doctor in the ring who determines that Weidman can't continue because Weidman was so hurt from the shot initially. When the doctor says he can't continue, Weidman claims he's okay and he's ready to fight, but the doctor essentially waves it off, and Musasi wins the fight by TKO, even though Weidman's up and walking around and saying he can fight. There's so many things that are weird about that. I'm not even really sure where to begin and what your thoughts were on it. But essentially, there was a question whether instant replay is even, like, legal in MMA. Because if there's an illegal blow, usually in the past, it's like, if it was a nut shot, they call it a nut shot. And that's what it is. Nobody goes back and says, oh, that really was on the thigh, or vice versa. So a weird situation where instant replay came in to affect the finish of a fight when it really never has before.
I think it's the biggest fuck-up in refereeing history. This is up there.
But like in that, they got. Do you think they got it wrong?
Every single thing they did was wrong. Every single bit of this was wrong. And it look.
Let's back up. Okay. Did you think it was an illegal shot?
No, I don't know. I wasn't there. Like it was close enough that.
Well, I mean, on TV, you probably had a better shot of it than even if you were there, right?
Even if on TV, I couldn't tell. It was so split second. Like the minute little hair difference there. I don't think that the rule in any way, shape, or form is designed for that. Obviously, that's why they got rid of the 3 points. He had 4 points down at one point, and then Musasi pulled him up. Musasi did not pull him up. Musasi just threw the knee, and he happened to come up. It was great timing, so it may have been technically legal at the very last millisecond, but it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. All of this is irrelevant because Dan Mirgliotta saw it and thought in his head it was illegal. Therefore, it is illegal. I know it sounds very pedantic, but the definition of an illegal strike is a strike that the referee says is illegal. If I go out and punch you in the nuts and the referee doesn't say it's illegal, it's not illegal.
Right.
He makes that determination all the time. Now, he may be a bad ref, but so be it. He said that was an illegal strike. Stop. He stopped it because he thought it was an illegal strike. So the fight was stopped because the referee thought something. Then he looks and hears it was a legal strike. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if somebody tells you it's illegal. All that would hearing it's a legal strike tell you is don't punish Musasi. It turns out you shouldn't take a point from him or anything like that. But you can't then turn around and say to Weidman, now the fight's over, that strike was legal. Weidman didn't quit. And you didn't stop the fight because you thought Weidman was hurt. You only stopped it because you thought something illegal happened. And as for the doctor looking at him, again, Mirgliotta has the authority, not the doctor. And the doctor shouldn't have been in there. And yet they're in the middle of the round and he got hit in the head. I'm sure Weidman didn't look good. I bet Musasi probably wasn't fit to continue if they really looked at him right then and there. But it's such a clusterfuck. Weidman got screwed so unbelievably here. This is just atrocious, and it's just very basic, and I if there's ever been anything in MMA history that should be overturned, it's this. Like, this is just horrible. This is a referee. Mirgliotta shouldn't be a ref for a while. This is as bad as when that chick in Brazil was afraid to, like, stop fights. Like, you're a referee. You have to make decisions. And he was incapable of making a decision, and he fucked over Weidman. And that was millions of dollars on the line that just got fucked up there. You know, Weidman's much further away from a title shot now, so that's a fucking massive mistake. Fuck you, Mirgliotta, you steroid-using moron.
Do you think, philosophically, though, there's an issue with instant replay in that situation? Like, granted, it's not... I don't think there's anything written anywhere that says instant replay is not allowable. Do you know, and this gets more to the case of each state having different rules and all that that we talk about ad nauseum, where it's like MMA is just so inconsistent and it's still a younger sport and things like this happen and nobody really knows what to do, obviously. But in general... would you be opposed to instant replay in a situation like that?
Like that? Yeah. I don't think that's
so. Whatever the ref decides. So he says it's an illegal blow and docks Musasi a point, and then we see it on TV, and they say it was truly a legal shot. You don't think something like that should be reversed?
No, because when it comes to something like an illegal shot like that, when it's so close, again, it's kind of like I'm going to defer to the guy who was right then and there and saw it closer than anybody in the world. To me, the only I would use instant replay for things that I would say are very obvious as far as changing the outcome of a fight, and it would generally just be taking things from wins to no contest or something like that. Like, for instance, a fight gets stopped on a cut. Cuts are determined by the referee, and the referee says it was a punch that cut him open, and then they rule it a TKO, and then later on they go back and see that it was actually a headbutt that caused it to be open. That's fair to me to change it to no contest, because you actually didn't cheat anybody in that situation. The fight was going to be stopped every time, no matter what. And so, but anything after that, it's got to be real obvious to me.
So, in this situation, Mirgliotta should have stopped the fight, given Weidman however much time he needed, and then just restarted it.
Yeah, he should have treated it. He should have treated it,
as a regular foul.
If Weidman had, was on two knees and he got hit, and they do. Okay. They think they had in the foul earlier in the round. I don't know. So yeah, fuck him.
Did you feel like Weidman was?
Yes.
Selling it, acting like he was more hurt than he really was to maybe get a DQ win.
Yeah. I don't know if he was looking for a DQ win so much as I think he was playing for a point.
Yeah.
And even if he didn't get the point then and there, it would definitely would put a situation where Mirgliotta would for sure take one the next time anything happens. So I think there's more gamesmanship like that, and I think it may have – I can't say it bit him on the ass. I have no idea. They don't even really know who stopped it. Some people thought the ref stopped it. Some people thought the doctor stopped it. It's just like I've never seen a fight where three people stopped the fight. It's just fucking stupid.
It was something else. So that's our UFC 210 recap. That was all the best stuff. Patrick Cote retired. All right.
This poor bastard.
Yeah, he got lost in the mix. As far as Canada goes, he's one of that entire nation's biggest stars in MMA history, probably after GSP and Rory McDonald. So this past Saturday, on April 15th at the Sprint Center in Kansas City, Missouri, we had UFC on Fox Johnson versus Ace, also known as UFC on Fox 24, if anyone's still counting. This show was a lot of fun. I really liked the main card a whole lot. As far as a rating sort of thing, I think it was the third lowest rated Fox event ever, which isn't the best news for Mighty Mouse Johnson. But at the same time, he looked phenomenal. He defeated Hayes by armbar in the third round. I believe this is his 10th straight title fight win. So he has tied Anderson Silva's record at this point. And a lot of people are talking about
10th straight defense, 11th straight win. 10th
straight defense. And so he's tied Anderson Silva's record at this point and will likely be going to set the record this summer. What did you think of DJ's performance?
It made him clearly the greatest fighter on the planet right now. It's I did 20 minutes on this on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
I was in awe of it. I think it's one of the greatest performances in title fight history almost. I think he's on such a different level compared to everyone else in his division. It's scary. He's only getting better, which never happens like this for champions. So I am in awe of everything he does in there. It's just stunning. I mean, when he's at the fucking point, I think at the end of the first or second round, and he was like, he'd land like 30 or 40 strikes, and Hayes had landed like three. It's insane. Right. And then he taps him out. He taps out a world champion grappler, and it's ridiculous. I have no idea what the hell who's going to beat him. There's nobody even near him in the world. It's a joke. Nobody would even be within, in my book, negative 500 of him. It's insane, and I don't see any reason why he's ever going to slow down. He looks healthy, and he moves well, and it's just he's brilliant. It's too bad that he's a midget and nobody really cares, but for those of us who do care, fuck, he's breaking all the flyweight curses. He's finishing guys all the time. He's the only guy finishing people. That's how good he is.
Now, do you think no one cares about him because he's small or because of his personality and the lack of, like, a villain for him? Like, you look at his title defenses, all the guys are so blasé where it's like, even a guy like Anderson Silva didn't draw much for years until Chael Sonnen came along, and that was a feud, and people remember that Sonnen-Silva thing forever. And Demetrius Johnson does not have anybody like that at all. I've always thought Ian McCall could kind of be that guy, but he can't even make it into the cage. Do you blame it just primarily on the weight or somewhat on DJ's personality? He's just a nice guy. He doesn't talk a lot of trash. And he just hasn't really had any foils.
You know, all the things that would normally make him not a draw are valid. And, you know, his personality isn't there. He hasn't had the foil. But he's just got so many wins in a row, and he's so dominant, and he's had really entertaining fights. To me, the size is one of those things where it's a hurdle he has to overcome, and he doesn't have enough to overcome it right now. Like, if he was a heavyweight and doing all this, he'd be a bigger star. If he was still bland, even if he didn't have any, you know, memorable moments or anything like that, he'd be a megastar, and the only difference would be the size.
Yeah, but he'd also be fighting guys with more name recognition. Nobody knows any of these flyweights.
But even if all these flyweights were heavyweights, and, you know, if nobody really knew the names, you know, if a heavyweight, UFC heavyweight champion that's undefeated, 10 in a row and all this shit, I'm not saying he'd be the biggest star ever, but he'd be a much bigger star than he is right now, where he's the lowest rated dude in Big Fox history. Now, again, if he had some of the X factors, he'd be breaking through in a way. He'd be definitely, I mean, again, Connor's small, and he's obviously the biggest ever, and Ronda's a chick, and she's small, and she's big, and, I mean, she's only 10 pounds bigger than Mighty Mouse, and she's a chick, so she still made it. So, yeah, if somebody comes around at that weight class, they'll be a big star, and they will one day, and it just won't be Mighty Mouse. It'll just be that really solid, great fighter that is a fucking god inside the cage.
Or maybe the guy who beats Mighty Mouse.
I think that could be it, too.
You know what I mean? If there's a 125-pound guy who can talk a little bit and be the Conor McGregor and DJ plays the Aldo, you never know. You can catch lightning in a bottle.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I just don't know who that guy is in the division. There's nobody. It's like, what's the next? Who's going to get the next shot? Benavidez, Sergio Pettis? Like,
even if
like neither of those guys are going to do it.
Well, that's just it. Like, even if somebody does come along and beat him and become a bigger star, and that probably will happen, the way what he's setting now for records, like when people look back at the record books of MMA and they kind of, you know, you have that 10 years in the distance and you're not caught up in the emotion of what being a star means. They're just going to look back, and no matter what, it's going to be like, holy shit, look what this dude did. Like, this is nuts.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he's incredible. I don't doubt that at all. So far as there's a lot of talk of him being greatest of all time. Do you have him in that mix? For me personally, as like a well-rounded fighter, he's up there with Jones. Like, John Jones doesn't have a lot of weaknesses. He's good everywhere. He's won fights by submission. Granted, Jones doesn't have many knockouts on his resume. I mean, the Shogun TKO is pretty memorable, but as far as well-roundedness, he's up there. I just question his resume, because 125 is a much thinner division than, you know, when GSP was at welterweight. I think his resume is more impressive as champion than DJ's. People were also comparing him to Anderson Silva, and Silva's resume is kind of weird too. When he first held that middleweight title, it was a fairly thin division. I mean, he had the Rich Franklin and the Dan Henderson wins, but there's also Talis Latis, there's Travis Luter. He had those four rounds. He got dominated against Sonnen. Where do you stand on Demetrius as the GOAT?
As far as, like, to me, there's two different definitions here you're kind of using. And
sure.
One of them was, you know, who's got, like, the greatest technical skills on their best day. I would have him in the mix for that as well. To me, it's still Dominick Cruz, because I'm in awe of what he does on his best day. But right. Demetrius Johnson, what he did on this fight, the way he was switching stances really was special. And then as far as accomplishments are concerned, he's top three with GSP and Anderson Silva. Silva and GSP because, you know, of their competition is a little bit better. And, you know, Silva did do it longer. I mean, even though they're tied right now at 10, Silva still had 14 wins in a row. Like, he's, you know, he won the 10 in a row at his weight, but then he went up and knocked out, you know, multiple light heavyweights in the first round, including a former light heavyweight champion. So, you know, he's got that in his feather, in his cap. And GSP, just because he's had, I mean, I think GSP wouldn't be number one if Silva didn't have the upper weight class wins, but otherwise GSP, you know, everybody he's ever faced in the history of that division he beat. It's incredible, and that's including modern-day championship-level guys. But, I mean, hell, what Mighty Mouse is doing here, if he just keeps winning, eventually I'm going to get to the point and be like, they're not huge names, but they're still really good fighters, and they're still professional fighters at a really quick division, and he's way ahead of them. It's nuts.
Yeah, he's getting very, very close on both. As a technical fighter, well-rounded, he's right there. As far as the resume goes, for me, he's a couple wins away. I'd love to see him go up to 135 again and get a, even if it's not for the title at 135, beating like a number five ranked guy at 135 would probably do something for that legacy and the pound for pound thing as well.
And I think he will. I think his legacy will get more and more secure because, again, he's still in his prime, and he'll get to the older time and he'll fight at the higher weights and he'll probably have one or two big wins there. Guess, you know, it's kind of same way that GSP is now fighting at middleweight. They end your career, you start fighting these fights, and GSP will probably lose to Bisping, but look okay, and you'll be like, well, you know, he still did pretty well with a champion of the world at the higher weight class.
Do you, would you like Johnson's chances moving up and facing Garbrandt?
Yeah.
You would?
Yes. For the same,
you don't think Garbrandt just hits too hard for him?
Oh,
you don't think Garbrandt can hit him?
I don't think Garbrandt can hit him. Really? I mean, it's the same reason I picked Dominic Cruz to beat Cody Garbrandt, and I would still probably pick him in the rematch. Is that Garbrandt is, I hate saying a one-trick pony, but he's basically just boxing. And, you know, if you get somebody who's really well-rounded, usually the well-rounded guy beats the one-trick pony, and it's a great trick. But Demetrius Johnson, because he's just so good, and he relies on speed so much. He's already trained himself to avoid getting hit at a faster weight class. Now, yeah, Garbrandt cracks you, and the size would throw off some of DJ's wrestling in particular. But, I mean, if DJ beat him, it wouldn't surprise me at all. That'd be a great fight. It will be a great fight, and they'll probably do it next year. But, DJ can beat him.
Okay. Good to know. In the co-main event, we had Rose Namajunas defeating the karate hottie Michelle Watterson by submission, rear naked choke, at 247 in the second round. Namajunas looked great. The thing for me with this fight was just Rose was so much bigger. She was longer. She was stronger. And that was always going to be Watterson's issue at 115. She had always fought at 105 and was the former Invicta champ at 105. And as she was going to move up the rankings at 115, you kind of knew this was going to happen eventually. Rose looked good everywhere. She was competitive on the feet and just dominated Watterson on the ground, beat her up, left her bloodied, and was probably the next strawweight number one title contender, I would think, after that performance.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I mean, she's beaten a bunch of people in a row now. And she's got a name. And when she did to Michelle Watterson, yeah, she was bigger, but she fought with a confidence I don't usually see out of anybody. Like, I almost never see it out of a woman. Female fighters just don't have that kind of crazy, in-the-zone, vicious confidence. And she was just in there, and it seemed like every time she was throwing anything, it was perfectly timed and designed to really hurt. And, you don't see too much of that really hurting type of strike. Most of the women fight more like Michelle Watterson, where they, you know, they hurt you and they can do damage, but there's not always a meanness to it. And Rose just seemed like she had that alpha male, pardon the reference, meanness to her. And I still think that Joanna is probably better because Joanna seems to have that all the time, not just once. But still, I think Rose has earned a title shot for sure. I mean, Andrade will get it next, but... I don't know who else she would fight. I don't. Do we want to see her fight? You know, Jessica Penne or some shit. Like,
Kayla, maybe. But Yeah. I feel like Yolanda's putting miles on her body with all these five-round fights, and there are these brawls, mostly standing, and she's getting hit with shots, and they're competitive fights. Granted, she's winning, but I feel like, and maybe it's just me, and you might disagree, but I feel with each fight, she's kind of lost, not a step, but lost a little something as she keeps going on these 25-minute brawls every 4 months, you know?
Yeah, she
and
does.
I feel like Rose is a little younger, has a little less wear and tear, and Rose is still on the upswing, and Yolanda might just be starting on her decline.
Yeah, it would depend on when they meet each other. You know, Yolanda, she just looked like unbeatable for a while there. She's looked a little more human lately, but she's still obviously winning. I think to her credit is, I think she's also just naturally tough. I think she could be somebody going out there and winning because of that, again, I'll say alpha male type of aggression. But she hasn't had to in the past. Like, she could get by with great technique, so she can transition better than a lot of women would. And I think that she's also just got a higher ceiling. She's coming down from a lot higher. I don't think Rose ever reaches as high a ceiling as Yolanda. But, yeah, they may, you know, one may go up as the other comes down just the right time. And, again, Rose, if this isn't just like a one-night thing, it's like a changing of the guard here, the crossing of the Rubicon into a new chapter of her career, then she could easily be the champion. But I also think she looks a little more beatable than Yolanda, so go with the chick that's winning. Well, let's just wait till they fight.
Prior to that, we had Robert Whittaker defeating Jacare Sosa by TKO, head kick and punches, in the second round, 3:28 in the second round. Amazing performance by Whittaker. I mean, I would say Jacare had to be the real heavy favorite in that fight. I didn't see a lot of people picking Whittaker. I know prior to the fight, like a day or two prior, Jacare signed a new contract. I think it was a six-fight contract with the UFC. So he re-signed. And even in the picture I saw online, he looked old. I think he's 37 at this point, which in MMA years and as an athlete, that's pretty old. That's my age. I can barely get out of bed, and I've never fought anyone in my life. So Whittaker just basically dominated Sosa on the feet, was the quicker guy. Sosa looked at, I mean, he's a jiu-jitsu guy, obviously, one of the best jiu-jitsu guys who's moved into MMA ever, has a ton of submission wins, and is good on his feet, but it's like he just looks so stiff and slow compared to Whittaker, who was in and out, mixing in kicks, mixing in punches. And Whittaker just had his number. Even when Sosa tried to get it to the ground, he had trouble getting the takedowns in the second round. He did get one in the first, but Whittaker was kind of able to shrug him off his back. Great win for Whittaker and kind of a tough loss for Jacare, because now he's way down the line as far as a title shot at middleweight.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Whittaker fought the fight of his life. I can't take anything away from what he did in there. He fought well. He deserved the win. Jacare, he basically just cost himself a title shot. I don't think he's ever going to get one now. And it's just because of his age, and there's so many guys. Like, the division needed somebody in that big four to kind of lose, to break up that. And now they just move in, you know, Whittaker and Musashi. But they just had, you know, those four killers, and Jacare and Weidman and Rockhold and Romero were just like, good gosh, any of these four guys could just run the table for you for a while. And so with one of them falling away, Weidman kind of falling away, it does basically, you know, leave Romero as the true number one contender, at least. And
you would think.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, I don't know what else he's kind of got to do. That all having been said, as bad as the refereeing was at 2:10, and that was fucked up, at least that was an abnormal situation. I thought this fight had the worst stoppage I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
Yeah, and the reason was, a lot of times I'll see quick stoppages.
That's got to be hyperbole a little bit.
Not really.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's weird reasoning behind it.
Okay.
Usually you see bad stoppages and you go, oh, shit. Like, you go, oh, that was too quick, or that was too late. But usually you think that, like, immediately afterward, And you can kind of, like, put yourself in the situation, be like, you know, the guy went down real quick. It was a flash. I can see with the referee if he's in the wrong spot or if he's erring the side of caution, whatever. Okay, fine. I can see that mistake. This fight, you're allowed to continue if you're intelligently defending yourself. And Jacare was shrimping. He was grabbing wrists. He was moving well. He was putting heels on hips. He was getting hit, yes, but he was absolutely fighting. Like, whatever shots he's hitting were not affecting his ability to be a jiu-jitsu player. And if this was on the feet, yeah, maybe he would have stopped it. You would have said, you know, he's not showing any ability to really do anything. But he was doing, you know, the jiu-jitsu equivalent of essentially ducking and bobbing and weaving as you would on your feet. You know, the way he was moving is the signs of a jiu-jitsu man who is still able to fight. I thought that, and the reason I call it the worst stoppage ever is because that's the kind of stoppage, you know, it was Yamasaki. Like, he almost went in there at one point and almost stopped it, and then he backed away. And he was so close that, I thought he almost accidentally kicked them. So he was right there on top, and he should have been able to see him moving. And that's why I think it's so bad, is because this is an everyday thing that a referee should be able to do. Like, this is the equivalent of calling a ball or calling a strike in baseball. This is not, you know, some fan reaching over weird and touching it. You go, shit, I got to look at the rule book. And again, I think it really fucks Whitaker, because I think that he would have won the fight. I think he was on his way to winning, but he hadn't won it yet. And that shit, I just, you know, fuck you, Yamasaki. You were a shit referee.
I thought it was a little early. I don't know if it was the worst stoppage ever. When I watched it live, well, I watched it on DVR, but it didn't really bother me as much as it bothered you.
I don't know why. I'm just irrationally hung up on this one. I know.
No, maybe I should go back and watch it again. I could be way wrong. As far as Whitaker goes, he has now won 7 in a row in the UFC. And that's moving up a weight class. His last loss was against Stephen Thompson in February of 2014 at 170 pounds. Since then, he's won, like I said, 7 in a row, 4 of them by knockout. So he's on a bit of a tear here. Anybody you think you should fight next? I know Luke Rockhold's called him out. Musasi might make sense.
Musasi's the first name that jumps out at me. Rockhold, I guess. I mean, to me, Rockhold should be fighting better fighters than him. I'm not totally sold on him. But, yeah, I mean, you can always throw Johnny Hendricks in there if he wins his next fight, because they want to fast-track that. At least they'd be kind of maybe the same size. But I think Musashi makes all the sense in the world. They can be, like, the best of that next generation of contenders, even though they're both kind of older. And
Whitaker's only 26.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's young.
He looks older as fuck. He looks like he's 34.
It's all that Foster's they drink in Australia.
Beer, as we call it. So, yeah, they can fight anybody.
Okay, perfect. Just anybody.
Anybody at all. Give me Tao's Lapis.
As far as the rest of that card goes, I'm trying to look over it right now. Tom Dukinwad debuted in the UFC. He's got a lot of potential in the bantamweight division. Good, I think he's won a couple Bama titles, maybe, or something.
He's French.
Is that means he's weak and will submit easily?
No, his name's just pronounced Tom Dukinois.
That was close. That was good.
And I love the French. I'm a Francophile. And it just means he's actually, they have a lot of hopes for him as far as, you know, he could be the guy that breaks the barrier in France and gets it legalized.
And then anybody else that catch your eye on the undercard?
There were a lot of good fights. Most of the fights were pretty good, but nothing really. I didn't give a shit about most of it, like, in hindsight. Like, fucking Alexander Volkov won after he avoided being smushed.
You know what fight I liked a lot was the Tim Elliott-Smoka fight?
Yeah,
a lot of good grappling. Awesome.
Yeah,
good.
That was, like, the fight of the year almost in some respects. Like, it was just, like, the next generation. I forgot about it, but it was, like, the next generation of, like, two dudes that were just going for it, and they didn't stop. Like, I couldn't believe that these guys were moving that much. So, yeah, they did some good shit.
Tim Elliott is very underrated, I feel like, and he's quickly becoming one of my favorite fighters. Like, he pushed Mighty Mouse more than pretty much anybody who's fought him, I mean, I know there was one Dodson fight that was pretty competitive, but Elliott hung with Johnson for a while there.
Yeah, I mean, when you see what Johnson...
Might have even won... I think... I can't remember, but I think I scored the first round for Elliott, or one of the rounds for Elliott.
I mean, when you look at... At the time, I thought maybe, you know... And I can still think that maybe that was just kind of like an off night for Mighty Mouse, but before that fight, Mighty Mouse looked great. Like, after that fight, he looks like the greatest I've ever seen. The only constant, you know, and the difference here is Elliott. Maybe Elliott really is, you know, good enough that he can do that to people. So maybe I'm really severely underestimating Tim Elliott.
Maybe. What else is going on in the world? Fight of the night went to Elliott and Smoka, and the performance of the nights went to DJ and Whitaker, which all makes sense to me. So I think if anybody remembers the show, they go back and look at it in history, they're going to remember DJ tied Anderson Silva's record and also had the lowest ratings on Fox ever. A weird, weird juxtaposition there. Is that the right word? Yeah, juxtaposition sounds good, right?
Yeah, that works.
All right, thank you. One other note we should mention related to UFC 210. John Jones was at the show. He had a presser beforehand and whatever, was talking about dick pills and how awesome they are. But Dana White has mentioned that he's going to give Jones two options for his return fight on June 29th, July 29th. And the two options are he can take a tune-up fight or he can get an immediate title shot against Daniel Cormier. What do you think Jones should do?
What an insult. Like, what a fucking... Like, what's he going to really say? I'm going to go out there and fight a guy that isn't as good just because I want to get my feet wet? Like, what an insult to that guy. Like, hey, watch John Jones fight the guy that he chose and said, all right, I need a gimme, so I'm going to fight you, Jimmy Manoa, or whatever. Like, what an insult. It could be true, but still weird. John Jones would absolutely say it that way. I don't know why Jones wouldn't come back and fight Cormier. It's just... You want your title, or right? You just go out there and do it. And I think Jones will. Nobody's going to want... I mean, good gosh, you want to make that division any more confusing and weird? You're going to have Cormier... Okay, John Jones is the champion. Cormier was the interim champion. Cormier became real champion. Then John Jones became interim champion. Then John Jones lost the interim championship while Cormier kept being the real champion. Then John Jones came back having never lost his interim championship or real championship, and fought somebody else for not the championship. What? No. Fuck it. It's just... he's got somebody to fight. The two guys who are called champions have to just fight each other now. Just get it over with. It's driving me nuts.
I agree. There's always that theory that if you fought once in 2.5 years, you might want to take a tune-up fight. People talk about ring rust all the time. And granted, you know, you've got Dominic Cruz who fought whatever once in 4 years and wins by knockout in 30 seconds. But those are aberrations for the most part. Could I see Greg Jackson arguing that he should take a tune-up fight and John Jones listening to that? Maybe. Would I bet on it? No. I'm presuming he's going to fight Daniel Cormier as well.
It's
but
just even things
there is an argument. There's a bad argument for it.
It just make it a little more even. It gives Jones a handicap. It's kind of like the closer we get to, like, all right, this time we'll do it with one hand tied behind his back. It's just the only way we can make things fair and interesting for John Jones. He's got to come back after 2 years off, basically, of only just doing cocaine and marijuana, and see how good he can be that way. And then he'll probably still win, because that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, probably. I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying that there's that argument out there. This was an interesting story that came out today. Korean police. Are you familiar with South Korea?
I saw that. I'm very familiar. I mean, I didn't hear any story. I'm just very familiar with Korean politics and police and things.
South Korea or North Korea?
This is the good Korea, South Korea.
Okay, yeah. So multiple reports are surfacing in Korea, citing an ongoing investigation regarding fight-fixing allegations from UFC's 2015 event in Seoul. According to these media outlets in the country, a Korean fighter whose identity they kept hidden agreed to throw a bout but ended up winning a decision against an American opponent. And I'm not sure we probably didn't talk about this at the time because we weren't doing shows, but I know we went back and forth about this a little bit because it was Leo Kuntz versus Tae Hung Bang. And like the spread or the betting odds just changed dramatically for no apparent reason. Like, I'm trying to find it here right now, but
it was like because somebody threw $2 million on them.
But yeah, but he went from like a 2-1 favorite to a 7-1 dog or something, like crazy odd swing. Because essentially, what is being reported is these Korean mobsters got a hold of Bang and said, "Hey, we'll pay you like $100,000 to throw this fight," and he apparently agreed to it, and then they bet $2 million on him. Then he changed his mind, wins the fight by decision, and he's been getting death threats from these mobsters ever since.
And
the story basically just broke in I guess the South Korean press in Pyongyang. Isn't that the capital of South Korea?
No, Pyongyang is the capital of North Korea.
Seoul. I get nervous. There's some
fake news happens.
Fake news. Anyway, the funniest part is he was paid to lose this fight, and then he still won it. So another typical fucked up MMA story. It's like you were paid to throw a fight, and you didn't even do it right.
Not only that, they gave him $80,000 to throw the fight, and he put $40,000 on Kuntz.
Right.
He knew he was going to lose. So not only did he fuck over the mob, cost them money, he cost himself money for no reason. If you were going to take the money and not throw the fight, just keep your half. You know, don't give away half of it. He just must have changed his mind in the middle of the fight for no good reason. This isn't like some movie where he goes, you know, I just couldn't do it. He's Daredevil's father. I just couldn't throw that final fight. I just couldn't do it. Except for Daredevil's father didn't take half the money he had and bet it against himself and then win. He bet on himself because the odds are all weird. And then you're like, oh, he always bet on himself. This guy bet on the other guy and then screwed himself, too. He's the dumbest person in MMA. This is it. He's Mergliato level stupid. I don't even know what he's doing. Who takes a bribe and then doesn't actually keep the bribe and in the process pisses off the mob? Dude, just get punched or get the armbar. This isn't like it's the end of the world here. It's a one fight on the undercard of the UFC. You'd get another shot, and then you'd make some more money or something.
And it's funny because every time people think there's a fixed fight, whether it's, you know, Shamrock Gracie or Shamrock Kimbo, whatever it might be, usually it's like a freak show fight that just looks unusual because it's two guys who suck. And if he had lost or got rocked or even lost by decision, like, he could have fought a shittier fight and just lost by decision and not got knocked out or submitted or had it look phony. Like, I feel like there's ways you can lose, just get outpointed and just lose that way. Unless there was some sort of, there had to be a finish or there was some other kind of parlay or something involved with the betting. Very bizarre, weird situation. And another reason to love MMA.
He's an idiot. I mean, it's so easy to just get tapped out. Anybody can get tapped out.
Yeah.
You just have to not fight. That's what's great about throwing a fight. You don't have to do anything. If you want to throw a boxing or a basketball game or whatever, like, you still have to run around and shoot the ball and shit. If you're in baseball, you gotta wait for the ball to come to you before you can do anything. Like, if you're in basketball, you got other guys on the court. It's a one-on-one fight. You just have to go out there and not fight. Just hold your hands up, and when the guy throws a punch, you just don't block it, and you get hit. Guess what? That happens all the time. It's really easy. I can go out there and throw fights all day long. Just give me enough money, I will stand there and just get punched in the head.
Do you think he got nervous, maybe?
I don't know what he
– like, because I mean, it was a very small news story. Somebody on Twitter, like Fury's Fight Picks, I think is the name of the Twitter account, he mentioned it. Like, he's one of those guys who makes picks, and you can subscribe to his site and see who he picks, and he's got a pretty good streak of picking fights.
No, he doesn't.
No, he claims to.
I don't even know who he is, but I know he doesn't. Anybody that has a betting, a gambling website, thing like that, they're all frauds. All of them are frauds.
He noticed this and pointed it out, and that's how I knew about it when it happened. So I wonder if at some point Bang was like, I can't do this. They know about it. The odds shifted too much. $2 million came in on me on this fight or whatever, or on my opponent. I can't do this because they'll know, and I'll be in trouble for throwing a fight. Like, my hunch is he got scared.
Well, who are you going to get in trouble with?
I don't know. You can't throw fights. In South Korea, you probably, get imprisoned for fucking 50 years for throwing a fight.
Well, I mean, still beats the alternative of dying at the hands of the mafia. there's no alternative to that. Like, if your option is, this one I get to live and be ashamed, the other one is I get killed by the mafia, it's a very, again, you still wouldn't lose half the money for your, it's just stupid. It's just so, you just lose. Just lose. For fuck's sake, this isn't Kickboxer or something like that. The mafia wants to kill you. You just do what they say. You don't even have to hurt anybody. I guess if, I don't want to, if the thing was like, you got to go out there and cripple the guy and take out his eye or something, you'd be like, I don't know, that's kind of weird. Like, you just have to let another grown man win a fight. This is really easy. This is fucking free money. But, I don't know, he's just an idiot. I guess they have meatheads in Korea, too. Fish heads, they probably call them.
Speaking of having the ability to make choices in life, Tim Kennedy has chosen to reenlist in the Army. He says he is pumped up, quote, pumped up to work for President Trump and Secretary of Defense Mattis. He claims he is headed to a dangerous place with lots of terrorists.
Yeah.
Tyron Woodley posted on Instagram he has begun training for his next fight. This would be his fourth fight in 12 months. People assume this means he'll fight at International Fight Week in early July. No mention of an opponent. Nothing's been announced. If you had to guess, who's Woodley going to fight in July?
It has to be either Maya or Masvidal. There's literally nobody else he could fight. Nobody else would even, unless George St. Pierre is going to 170 and we don't know, but otherwise, no one he could fight. Like, that's the guy.
Can that be the main event, though? Woodley versus Masvidal? Well, no. What's it going to be? They're saying Jones can't fight until the end of July.
Yeah, I don't know. They'll figure. They'll pull something out of their ass. Maybe it'll be Ronda or Connor or who knows. It's probably going to end up being Bisping and GSP. Like, my guess is they just get that done for that day, and then they can be like, yep, we got the big fight, we don't have to worry, big. Yeah, no, you can claim that's the big show. Go for it.
Okay. I think you wanted to talk about this. You didn't really want to talk about Tim Kennedy, but there was a report by a site called MMA Media Watch that came out last week. They did a survey. No one knows who they surveyed. Nobody really seems to know who is behind this site, but they've got like a picture of Woodward and Bernstein on their site, like that 70s era newsroom stuff. I'm not sure if it's actually Woodward and Bernstein, but it looks like Washington, D.C. newsroom back in the 70s. Anyway, that might be a bit of a stretch for what these guys are trying to do, but they took a survey, and some of the results were interesting. I'm not sure if you remember any of the results or anything that pops out in the back of your mind.
I just remember rampant fart sniffing everywhere.
What does that mean?
Just a bunch of guys sniffing their own assholes and their own farts, thinking it smells great and shit like that. Like, it was so much like, oh, we're very noble and we're all together, or the, so much of us, there's not, people are afraid, they're all, everybody's canning stories, they're afraid to anger the UFC, and like, I'm like, shut up, you're afraid to anger them? What do you mean, what access are you really losing if you're not in the UFC? Like, all the press conferences are videotaped and put on YouTube. Everybody just takes them from there anyways. You're not seeing anything new when you're in person. You still have the freedom to interview the fighters for your podcasts and radio shows and things like that. Like, Ariel Helwani is persona non grata. He's fine. So, you know, when you talk about, oh, everybody's afraid, but it's always guys talking about somebody else. It's always somebody else canned a story. Never I canned a story. They're, you know, everybody's acting like there's some mythical big story out there that's being canned all the time. It's like, no, what, it's sports. There's never really a big, big, important story in sports. Every once in a while, there's a Penn State Sandusky thing, but for the most part, sports are sports. Like, what's a big controversy happen in the NFL? Deflategate? People spent months and months, everybody lost their mind. Why? Because he fucking changed the pressure of a football. The worst thing he did was cheat at playing a game.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. This isn't important. This isn't life and death. Nobody gives a shit.
Yeah, people spend a lot of money on it, though, man. Okay, so let's do this. Since you don't remember a lot of it, I'm going to ask you some questions based on the survey, and you're going to give me what you think, how people voted on this thing. What percentage of MMA journalists have zero formal training?
Oh, is like 18%?
30.8% have zero training, which they admitted to in the survey that they responded to.
That's what I don't get. Was that people admitting it? Was that other people guessing? I don't know.
I think they were asking how much formal training do you have, and they wrote zero, and that was the number one answer. Number two was a 4-year non-writing degree, which was 23%. 19% said a 4-year journalism degree. 15% went to college and didn't graduate. And a 4-year other writing degree was 11%.
I would trust the guys that wouldn't have a formal 4-year degree in journalism the least. I would think that they're the guys most likely to be coming at it from an outsider's perspective. And, like, they don't really understand or care about the sport itself so much as kind of like just a, you know, another step on their career. Like, not that they dislike it. Like, Brett Okamoto, like, maybe likes MMA, but I don't see, like, him as a super active participant in the game. He's probably, you know, once he gets to move on to the baseball beat, but like, all right, I'm going to do baseball now. Otherwise, I mean, let's face it, getting a degree in journalism has only been around for a couple decades, realistically. Like, you don't need a degree to be a good journalist. You just need to know how to write and do a story. Like, they're not teaching people great skills in journalism. This isn't being an engineer. It's asking who, what, when, where, why, and how, and writing it down. Like, it's really not very complicated. They just want to pretend like it's some great noble thing, and they're just trying to make a buck. They're writing dick and fart jokes and putting bait, you know, clickbait titles up. They are, not me.
Some more than others. How many of the outlets are credentialed by all promotions, including the UFC?
Oh, I don't know, 30?
56%. Huh. 25% by all promotions but the UFC. It's probably like Sherdog. And then 19% have never applied at all.
You know what? Actually, that probably gives you a very good indication of how many people are really taking this thing.
Right. Well, it can't be that many.
Yeah.
I mean, how many sites are there?
I mean, if that many people that responded aren't getting credentialed, like, if they're real big journalists, they're getting credentialed. There's, like, what, one dude that isn't in this aerial? Anybody else not getting credentialed, you're going to be really small guys that don't really matter.
Mm.
Like, you know, again, the only major guy that's not credentialed is Ariel, and I guess I think Sherdog's probably still banned, but...
No, Ariel's credentialed now. Oh yeah, that's right.
He was always credentialed. He just wasn't, you know, super credentialed.
I hate to say biggest, but it's probably Jonathan Snowden.
No,
you
know, Josh Gross.
Oh, Gross too.
Gross
yeah.
is way bigger than he who shall not be named, which I think is a Harry Potter thing. But I always thought it was.
It is a Harry Potter thing.
I thought it was a Lord of the Rings thing.
No, it's Voldemort, I think.
I don't know. Somebody gave me shit because I didn't know this stuff because I saw like 1.5 Harry Potter movies.
My daughter was into it a year ago. We watched a bunch of them.
Yeah, that's fine. That makes sense. I'm a 34-year-old grown man without children. Why the fuck am I?
Comic books.
Yeah, because
no
I've been reading. No, there isn't a difference. The only difference is that I didn't grow up with Harry Potter, so I think it's stupid. Gotcha.
Okay. So you're an ageist.
I'm just a generationist.
We'll get to that later. As far as pay goes, what percentage of these guys are salaried?
I don't know, 10?
36%.
God, what a scam.
34% are not paid at all. 13% are paid based on traffic. And then 15.4% are paid via other. I can only imagine what that entails.
Probably flow.
As far as annual MMA wages are concerned, what percentage makes over $150K a year?
Should be zero.
1.9%.
There's more than one person?
Well, maybe they only asked 50 people. Then it was one of them.
Even if it's just one.
Yeah.
Fuck. My joke.
Less than 35K was the number one response with 75%. I kind of feel like this is a Family Feud.
This is kind of like most of the percentages are probably accurate for most journalism. Like, most journalists aren't making a lot of fucking money. It's not just MMA.
True. Yeah, you're right. What percentage believe they are paid fairly for their talent and work?
Zero.
51.9%. So these are fairly humble people, I guess. Let's see.
I'm not paid enough.
Do you believe your outlet provides unbiased reporting with no conflicts of interest? What percentage said yes?
53.
84% think they're unbiased and have no conflicts. 15% said no.
Yeah, and how many do you think the other guys all have conflicts? The same number.
Probably. What else do we have here? Okay, so here we go. Based on journalists' opinions, which outlet provides the best unbiased ethical journalism?
Well, I withdrew us from consideration. So, I don't know, they probably say MMA fighting.
Yeah, 30%. I mean, obviously they're the biggest, so they're going to have an edge, obviously, but 30% said them. Then it was Bloody Elbow, MMA Junkie, Bleacher Report, and Observer. Sherdog only had 5.8%, which I found interesting.
It's a fucking industry where the two of the biggest media outlets have the name Junkie and Bloody in them. Not exactly true. The old gray lady here, you know. Fuck.
Which outlet fails to deliver unbiased ethical journalism?
Flow.
In a fucking landslide. 43.8%. And the next closest was Fox Sports, which is basically in bed with the UFC with 16%.
Way to go, Botter.
Like, how the hell, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
24%? Like, they've got more than essentially all the other ones combined.
Yeah, well,
you know what I mean?
When you're...
you can win a presidential election with 43.8% of the popular vote. No problem.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so Flo is the Donald Trump of MMA.
What percentage of respondents... what percentage of respondents have killed a story due to fear of promoter retribution?
23%.
9.6.
Liars.
14% of them lied. What percentage of respondents have been ordered by a superior to kill a story?
Oh, 24%.
23.
Now they're telling the truth.
What percentage have accepted payment from a promoter in the form of travel arrangements?
At least one.
8%. 8% have gotten paid to go to shows.
Who the fuck is getting... Who is taking money from a promoter besides Ariel? That's insane. I mean, I would do it in a heartbeat, but I outwardly have, you know, no morals, which therefore gives me morals in my way. 8% of these people are getting paid to go do shit? What the fuck? That's like the first rule you don't break. Jeez, fuck, man.
Okay, out of these six options, which was chosen as the biggest issue facing MMA journalism in 2017? Desire to be friendly with fighters' promoters, fear of promoter retribution, poor ethical standards, lazy reporting, no formal journalism training, or promoters unwilling to help.
Fear of reprisal?
That was number two. 57% said that was an issue. Number one, 63% of people said desire to be friendly with fighters' promoters.
That's kind of like a cover-all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like,
how so?
Well, I mean, if you're afraid of reprisal, it's the same thing. You know, you're going to go along with being friendly with the owners and things like that. Like, you know, they're all kind of related. It's all just basically like, they're all saying the same thing, which is there's one big organization in this industry that we all rely on to make a living, but we also have to try to be critical of it, and we don't know what to do. And yeah, it sucks, but I don't know. Again, remember, your job is just to basically record the modern day Roman gladiators here. Like, you're the stenographer for the end of an empire, really. So just enjoy your job.
According to respondents, who is the best writer in MMA?
Ariel.
He doesn't really write much. He was not. He got
yeah,
zero.
But who the fuck knows any of these guys?
Ben Folks won.
Okay. All right.
Best on-screen talent.
Your boy.
I'm not sure who my boy is, but Ariel Helwani won this award.
No, I was going to go with Luke Harris?
Luke Thomas.
Luke Thomas, there we go.
Yeah. He won Best Radio Host.
One of them is a lot easier on the eyes than the other, let's be honest.
They're both lovely, lovely gentlemen.
Ariel looks like a balding ferret.
I'd have to look at a ferret to confirm on that.
Or a balding mouse or rat.
Ooh, rat-like. Speaking of...
Rat-like?
Companies that aren't looking so good, the World Series of Fighting is rebranding itself. That's probably the best way to describe it. This has been getting not a lot of good press. A lot of people are bashing them for what they're trying to do, but... Essentially, next year, they're going to change their name to the Professional Fighters League. And it's going to be basically a 10-month season. It's going to feature 7 different weight classes. They haven't named what the weight classes are yet, but they're claiming 7 weight classes. Each fighter will compete in 3 regular season fights. Those fighters with the best records will move on to a playoff and then the championship round. Right now it's unclear at this time what would happen if fighters end up with identical regular season records, but the idea is to make this more like, you know, baseball, basketball, football, that sort of thing. They have a regular season, they go to the playoffs, and then they fight for the championship. Kind of similar to the IFL format, except no teams. The 7 tournament champions will win a $1 million purse at the end of the season. And an additional $3 million will be shared between other regular season and playoff competitors, but specifics as far as the payout details haven't been released yet. The inaugural season is set to officially kick off in January, despite World Series of Fighting still having 4 more shows already on its schedule this year. Obviously, this is based on them being bought out. I think a few investors got together and bought, you know, they spent $25 million on WSOF and are changing it up and rebranding the company. Is this a concept that can work on any level, you think?
No.
No, okay.
No. I mean, I will like it. I enjoy anything that's different like that.
It hasn't even started, and you already know you'll like it.
Yeah, it's the same reason.
I like that. That's very positive for you. I like that.
I'm not always a curmudgeon. I really, really, really liked the original Bellator format with all the tournaments. I thought it was a good way to make stars because I got to see the same guy fight like 3 times in about 12 weeks or so. It was very easy to get caught up to date and learn a new name. And, you know, so many times these promotions have guys and you go, who? And I can just remember with Bellator going, okay, yeah, I just saw that guy. I just saw Dantes fight. And it was kind of, you know, it was the same principle as what World Series of Fighting is kind of doing, you know, just having these a season. And it's just a, you know, it's just another tournament. That's all that's all they really are. And anything that gives a little bit of structure, you know, the UFC can afford to get away with anarchy, and it's fine. I like it. And, you know, we get to see the best guys fight. It's kind of pro wrestling like, and it works because you're seeing the best fighter, and you just, all you want to see is the best fighter. You're not going to see the best fighter in the World Series of Fighting. At best, you're going to see the best fighter in the World Series of Fighting. And I'd rather they just be entertaining. I want to watch the story and the drama the same way I do in other sports. I mean, nobody that wins a World Series is ever really the best. It's usually one of the better guys, and that's one of the better teams. It'll probably be the same thing with World Series of Fighting. So I'm okay with that in other sports. So, yeah, I'll go with it.
I'm actually okay with it, too, to be honest, because it's something different. And when you're the third string promotion, it's like you need something different. You need something to differentiate yourself. Having, you know, just good fighters fight with no name value and not a lot of purpose behind the fights, I think it gives them something. It sets them apart. It's a little different. Do I think they're going to make a lot of money doing it? No, but I don't think anything they would do would necessarily make them a lot of money, but at least it's different. It's not a knockoff of UFC and a knockoff of Bellator. It kind of sets them apart a little bit and might give people a reason to watch, and maybe they can build towards those championship fights and people will want to see them. You never know, but their current business plan is not working. They're losing money. They had to sell. There's talks of corruption within the ranks, and you know, your Ali Abdelaziz being a matchmaker and a manager of the fighters he's making the fights for. There's all that baggage and stuff. They need a new, fresh beginning. Granted, I don't think there's enough room in the United States for three successful money-making MMA companies right now, but it's something.
And, you know, they may make a profit for NBC because, you know, they're not paying these guys very much money. These shows aren't going to be really expensive in that they're not renting out big venues. And, you know, as long as they're feeders and everybody knows it. Again, like, to me, when if I tune in and I see it's a tournament or a season, that's way more enjoyable than if I just tune in and I see random people fighting, because I don't know if random people are good. It could be, you know, a local show or whatever, just with nice bright lights. When you know it's a tournament and they can flash on screen real quick, he beat him, he beat him, he beat him, he beat him, and that's how we are here today. You go, okay. Like, I know what this guy's done, and I can see who he beat in relation to everybody else, and you kind of seeded them, and it gives me a frame of reference, as opposed to just, you know, you're telling me these two guys are good, but I don't know who they are. Like, I'm not watching your program regularly, so I'm never going to follow and know who the top guys are in your division. So at least when you show me a tournament screen, I go, huh, okay, and I know where we are right now. Okay, right. It's like when I see NASCAR every once in a while, I don't know shit about NASCAR. But I can, like, follow along and be like, this guy needs to score this many, needs to come in this place. I'm like, oh, okay, there's a bigger, larger narrative. I'm entering a world as opposed to just having an escape for 5 minutes.
Speaking of new shows that people are super excited for, The Ultimate Fighter's on tonight.
I have it on right now.
Yeah, this is season 25. It's called Redemption. Basically, they're bringing back former UFC fighters. The two coaches are Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw. A couple months back, a clip came out where Garbrandt was, like, choking Dillashaw, like, in the hallway between the dressing rooms, it looked like. So it looks like, you know, you're going to get some drama. There's going to be kind of name fighters on it. Not big names by any stretch, but you've got guys like James Krause, Ramsey Nijem, Joe Stevenson, Jesse Taylor. So some guys who have been on Tough in the past and had runs in the UFC, Eddie Gordon, but the show is so far past its prime that I don't see even bringing back these previous, you know, somewhat stars and making much of a difference as far as ratings or interest goes.
No, I mean, this feels like the MMA version of, like, Celebrity Rehab. It's just... some of these guys are, you know, Joe, they're at 170, and Joe Stevenson fought at 145 at one point. Like, he just doesn't care. He's just back, and it is what it is. Like, all these guys have to be in the house and look at each other and be like, man, we're the fucking losers. Like, we're the most famous losers. We're the guys who don't deserve to be in the company but still have a little bit of name value. But everybody watching this knows we're not going to be in there long anyways. So, whatever. I don't know. I'm watching it, so what the hell am I doing?
What do you say? I'm DVRing it?
I say record.
Yeah, I still say tape.
That's so do I sometimes, so too, but I try to stop it.
Yeah, it sounds so old and dated. I gotta move out of the 1990s. This weekend, on Friday night, April 21st, at the Mohegan Sun Casino in Uncasville, Connecticut, we have a Bellator show. This is actually headlined by Daniel Strauss versus Patricio Pitbull, number 4 for the featherweight world title. Were you aware these guys had fought 3 times previously?
No. And when you said, is Patricio Pitbull number 4, my first thought was, he's like, you know, number 4, Pitbull number 4.
Pitbull number 1 and Pitbull number 2, well, yeah.
He has brothers nicknamed Pitbull. There's other people in that gym named Pitbull. Maybe he's Pitbull number 4.
No, this is their 4th fight, and it's for the featherweight title. Talk about a weird, like, booking of fights and matchmaking in Bellator, where these guys have fought 3 times and no one even knows it.
Well, it's just Bellator.
I know, but even so, how often do in MMA guys fight 4 times? Especially when no one cares.
No, it just doesn't happen. So it's crazy, but I guess, look, if this had been in the middle of a season-long thing, I'd be okay with it. You know, if he had 4 Super Bowls in a row with the same 2 teams facing each other, he'd be like, well, whatever, you know, they just keep winning their season. But there's something weird when it's like, when you don't have that structure, because when you have that structure, you're kind of like, guys are almost making their own path. So you're like, fine, they just force the issue. This is kind of like, really, you guys are just going to keep giving us this? Like, you can't, the promotion, you guys can't find anybody better? We're just doing replays? One of these guys can't move up in weight or something? But I don't know, it's Bellator. They're just filler programming, too. They're just filler programming that every once in a while has something freak show attractive.
I'm trying to figure out what their records are, because I'm assuming it's got to be 2-1. You know what I mean. So this would probably assume it would tie them up. Let's see. 1. I can't figure it out. Hang on. 1-1. Where the hell is
this? Are you on their Wikipedia?
Nope. Daniel Strauss doesn't appear to have a Wikipedia, so I had to go to SureDog. Those unethical bastards. So Patricia. Okay. Yeah, so Strauss is 1-2. He beat Pitbull in their last fight. It was a unanimous decision. And prior to that, he had lost to him by rear naked choke and a unanimous decision.
I just had thoughts.
In fights nobody remembered. So if Strauss wins this one, it'll be 2-2. Do you run it back a 5th time?
No, I would, yeah.
Like, I don't understand the purpose of booking this way.
I do it.
No one cares now. They're not going to care again in the future.
Yeah, the more they fight each other, the more their name gets out there in some capacity. They're not going to lose
it. 7 times, best of 7, it like a playoff series?
Hey, it would be something different at least. But I was going to say, it had an Ultimate Fighter on the background. To put in perspective just how useless this show is, earlier today, I was looking for shit on the show, and I thought at one point, it's kind of weird that Conor McGregor was able to avoid coaching this show, because I forgot that Conor coached it. That's how pointless this show is.
Oh, yeah, against Faber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm kind of, oh, yeah, that's who coached against. Like, nobody gives a shit. The biggest fighter in the history of the sport. I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess he coached it. Whatever. Like, the show is, what a fucking joke. Now we have these fucking, it's like UFC methadone clinic.
On the undercard, on the prelims, which
Bellator's
probably
a flop house.
You do have Ed Ruth and Tyrell Fortune, 2 NCAA wrestling standouts, fighting. I think it's both of their 3rd fights. They're not fighting each other. They're fighting a couple of jobbers. But Bellator, it's 2 of those guys who they're trying to build and get some experience and hopefully create some heavyweight stars down the road. So if you're into that, it's something to check out on the prelims, I guess. It might air on the main card if they're impressive wins, too. But other than that, this show is pretty much a bunch of scrubs you've never really heard of. AJ McKee. But other than that,
Is it AJ McKee or his kid?
It's the kid.
It's a fucking kid.
It's not Antonio. It's AJ, who's 7-0, fighting at featherweight. Yeah. So then on Saturday, we've got UFC Fight Night Swanson versus Lobov. Technically, this is UFC Fight Night 108. I can't believe there's been that many of them. This is taking place at the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, Tennessee. Obviously, in the main event, we've got Cub Swanson versus Artem Lobov, which when it was announced, I thought was a major mismatch, and I still think that now. How Lobov got in a main event on any UFC show is pretty baffling. I mean, he's fought in the UFC.
It's not baffling.
It's baffling. He's fought in the UFC Connor. Four times. He's never main evented. He's never been close to a main event.
He's a friend of Connor. That's it. That's all. There's no mystery.
The reason he's in the UFC, period, is because he's a friend. Exactly. Connor.
Connor's,
he doesn't need a main event.
Yeah, apparently he does. Connor's buddy gets his own solar system, too. That's just how it works. Connor's that damn big of a star. His little trainee buddy fuckface from Russia gets a main event slot. He's going to get massacred, like you said. This is a joke. This is a top 10, top 5 guy who just had the greatest fight of all time against Artem Lobov. Artem Lobov sounds like a guy who will be punch drunk in his life. His name sounds like it. He sounds like a kind of guy that's a jobber, and he is a jobber. He's Artem Lobov, and he's going to lose, and I'm going to cackle.
His career record right now is 13-12-1.
I mean, that's insane.
And it's against not good fighters. Yeah. Like, scrubs, essentially. It's weird. I guess they need a main event, and I don't understand how this is a favorite of Lobov or Connor, though, sending him in to get killed against Cub Swanson.
Because it's a big fight. It's a big fight, and it's a main event.
Is it, though? Does he get paid more for a show on Fox where he main events like that?
Even if he doesn't.
His purse is his purse, whether he's on the opener or the main event. It's not like he's getting pay-per-view points or anything.
But if... You're only going to help your career if you're Lobov by fighting a top guy. Because he's not going to get there by any conventional means. So his only shot of it, like a fluke, land the one punch and get the win type of thing is to, you know, get it like this. Because otherwise, you know, if he had to work his way up, he's already proven he can't get past the second or third rung on the ladder. That's what happens when you're 13-12-1. You're almost the definition of one step forward, one step back your entire career. And the one time you didn't go forward or back, you managed to stay exactly in place. So after this fight, he's going to be 13-13-1. It's going to be an incredible run of a guy having like the most even record in MMA history.
He actually has a no contest, too. So he'll
there
be
you go. He's
13-13-1-1.
That's incredible. Like, that's an almost impossible record. It's so amazing.
It is pretty good. I should pull up the odds on that fight, but I'm not going to. In the co-main event, we have Raging Al Iaquinta versus Diego, the Nightmare, the Dream, whatever he's calling himself this month, Sanchez. I'm actually interested in this fight for reasons that have really nothing to do with fighting. I just like Diego in general. I think he's a whack job, and I find him endlessly entertaining, whether he's coming out with a cross or if he's calling himself the Dream. Or he's also claiming, and you can clearly speak better on this than I can, he did an interview with Ariel Helwani talking about medical marijuana, and he's claiming that, and this is verbatim, I'll read the quote. He says during training, "I hit the ground and I felt something inside my heart. It wasn't like a muscular injury. It was something internal. I just laid down and said, I'm done for the week. The moment I laid down at the back of the gym, I instantly knew it was because of that medical marijuana. Whatever happened, it was serious. I could feel something going on, and I was very, very terrified that if I got my heart rate back up that I could, like, die or something. He goes on to say, despite the serious scare, Sanchez didn't go to the doctor or hospital initially, choosing to just take some time off from training and sticking to fasting and praying. He said that he had obtained a medical marijuana license late last year and had been smoking since then. But eventually he did decide to go to the hospital, thinking that this could have been a potentially career-ending issue. The doctor said it was a muscular injury and that his heart was perfectly fine. He didn't see it that way. Sanchez says, my lungs were being affected, and I still had the mentality to train like a warrior. So when the heart issue happened to me that day at the gym, I was still experimenting with the medical marijuana. I did it, and I loved it, and I got my medicinal medicine. I'm not judging. I'm saying that medical marijuana is not for everybody, and it's not for me.
I'm looking up something right now. I wonder... I bet
you keep looking it up, but part of the reason, another factor I like this fight, not only is Diego a weirdo, but Aya Quinta is also a weirdo. If you remember back, his last fight in the UFC, he beat Jorge Masvidal, who's moved up to welterweight and is one fight away from getting a title shot at welterweight. And he went on like this lunatic rant after the fight, swearing at the fans, telling them to fuck off. He gave them the finger. And it was like this classic Raging Al post-match promo. And then he basically was put on the UFC 205 card in Madison Square Garden. He's from Long Island, I believe. And then pulled out because he felt like he wasn't getting paid enough money and wasn't making any money. And he was going to go into real estate and be done with fighting. He was retired. It wasn't worth his time. And now he's back, despite saying he's working as a trainer and making a ton of money selling real estate. He's decided to come back for no more money.
He needs to get a new nickname, because when I hear the word raging, the only word that follows is hard on. It's not Al.
I think Raging Cajun. Remember Flash LaRue?
Yeah, that's raging, not raging. Raging, the ing, is just automatically goes to throbbing cock. After.
Really?
That's just
that doesn't happen for me.
You're just a weirdo then.
I guess.
Also,
yeah.
Aya Quinta should be, and the Athletic Commission should be very concerned about Diego, because I had to look it up about the medical marijuana laws in New Mexico. And there's only a couple of qualifying conditions. You're not just giving it out like candy there. I mean, he might have Lou Gehrig's disease. He might be anorexic. He might have cancer, cervical dystonia. I don't even know if men have cervixes. Crohn's disease.
Not typically.
He could have epilepsy or glaucoma, Hep C or AIDS. He could have Huntington's disease, something awful that's called intractable nausea and vomiting. Diego Sanchez might have multiple sclerosis. My gosh. He could have Parkinson's disease, post-traumatic stress disorder, spinal cord damage. My gosh. Diego could be a mess. Or he could just have, you know, chronic pain and arthritis. That horseshit. Yeah. Look at this jackass.
I can't imagine Diego Sanchez would have chronic pain.
I just love this list. Like, list all these real serious things. HIV, cancer, Parkinson's disease, chronic pain. Like, yeah, or you're just going to throw in the loophole there and think we're not going to notice it as you slip it in between Huntington's disease and then tractable vomiting. Anyways, Diego, you're a madman. He's going to do something in this fight, and it'll be entertaining if El Aya Quinta wants it to be. Otherwise, El Aya Quinta is still going to win, because I think he's just younger, and Diego is at a stage in his life where he's just trying to hit people and maybe get lucky.
Yeah, Diego's like legit one of my favorite fighters ever. Like, clearly he's not the greatest fighter ever, but he always has good fights, and he's such a weirdo. I find him super entertaining. His personality is so, like, off the wall and unusual. He's like nobody else in MMA, and he's just got this history of crazy, awesome brawls and fights with so many different guys. And to me, though, Aya Quinta is good, man. He had that Masvidal win. He's won four in a row. But I've always heard stuff like he's like the raging nickname he has like truly fits. Like he's destroyed some hotel rooms. He shows up to like the Fighter Summit shit face. Like he's a maniac in his own right. So I'm interested in that fight, even though Diego's, you know, 5 years probably past his prime at this point. I'm still looking forward to it because both guys have such unique personalities.
Do you ever get so angry you quit your job and became a real estate broker? Now, that's some real raging anger.
I did. Customers were booing me one night, and I'm like, I'm working really hard. I did the best I could. I'm sorry your food took too long. Then I flicked them all off and stormed out of the building.
And 8 months later, you showed them by selling that first house.
Also on the undercard, we've got Ovince St. Preux versus Marcos Rogério de Lima, John Dodson versus Eddie Wineland, which sounds more interesting to me. Yes. Joe Lauzon, another guy, one of my favorites, awesome fights all the time. He's probably a couple years past his prime as well, versus a guy named Stevie Ray, which is kind of a weird fight for Lauzon to take, but I mean, at this point in his career, he probably doesn't have a lot of say in who he's going to fight next, and he's just taking fights here and there. But Stevie Ray, not a name on many people's radar at all.
He's good, though. He's fun. Like, he's a fun fighter, so that'll be good.
I mean, I'd favor Ray just because Lauzon's old and beat up now. And usually when you do that, Lauzon manages to pull off a win, but we'll see there. Opening the main card on Fox Sports 1, we've got Jake Ellenberger versus another maniac, Mike Perry. Could be a fun fight. I mean, I'd favor Perry just because he hits hard and Ellenberger's had a weak chin over the last several years.
Yeah, I don't really care. Neither one's going anywhere.
Ever. They're at least going to Nashville. What
else?
A
sentence that nobody's ever been happy to utter. Smiling Sam Alvey fights.
He does. Tell us, Latis. Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good fight. That's going to be on the main event of Fox Sports 2. So yeah, nobody
won't be able to see it.
Nobody sees it. Who this?
I wonder how they decide which ones are going to be at Fox Sports 2. There must be something on Fox Sports 1
baseball.
Prior to this card. Yeah.
I'm sure they have baseball on.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's tough, man. Nobody's going to find that on Fox Sports 2.
You can usually catch it, the feed, on the Spanish channel, so that's what I'm going to have to do.
Right, but I'm just saying normal people.
Oh, well, normal.
You know what I mean? If you wanted to watch the prelims, you'd go to Fox Sports 1 and see baseball on and not even bother going to Fox Sports 2. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure.
It's so rare they're on Fox Sports 2 in this day and age.
Well,
you know?
Let's face it, nobody's watching this shit anyways.
Yeah. Dustin Ortiz versus Brandon Moreno, flyweight fight. Yeah, but I'd have to favor Ortiz big time. You would think Ortiz would be able to take him down and beat him up, but Moreno surprised some people with several straight wins in the UFC now. And the thing I like about him, it's another personality thing. He's only 23. He's from Mexico. He's got this broken English, but he's always smiling. He's always happy. And he's actually won 9 straight fights. Granted, you know, 6 or 7 of them were in, you know, minor leagues by any stretch, Valley Center, California. But he's got wins.
Coop.
He's got wins over Luis Smoka and Ryan Benoit at this point. So he's looked good. To me, he's still got some holes in his game. I question his ground game and his wrestling, but we'll see what he does with Ortiz.
Yeah, it should be a good fight. Ortiz will probably win on the ground because he's showing himself to be able to hang with world-class dudes down there. But, I mean, Moreno is just always improving. He's one of those guys that he really may truly have been like this stereotype Mexican fighter, just had nothing and just kind of got by in natural talent. And it's going to be like they bring him to a home and he gets to eat real food, like real meals for the first time if ever. Like all these poor Brazilians sleep on the floor. It's like, you're going to get regular food now. He's like, holy shit, this is great. And like you're like, oh, yeah, he's that good. And he's sleeping on dirt. Like, he had, like, a blanket of dogs before. So this is a big step up for him.
Opening the show is on Fight Passes, Matt Schnell, who was formerly on Caged on MTV, who nobody thought would make it and was a joke of a show. And he's won, I think, Titan, the Titan, whatever, fighting championship, their flyweight belt. So Matt Schnell went from reality star to real UFC fighter. He's fighting Hector Sandoval in the opener.
Yeah, that cage thing, it just sounds like a gay porn.
Does it? Caged?
He's on MTV's Caged.
And that makes you think gay porn.
Caged heat. Yeah.
Okay. You ready for some stuff?
Sure.
All right. I noticed on Facebook you claim to have never heard of Kendrick Lamar. Was that a work or a shoot?
A little hyperbole. I kind of know the name. I could not pick him out of a lineup. I wouldn't know a single song of his. I've kind of heard the name, and I assumed he was like, I don't know if he does rap or R&B or what. I just figure he's like on Instagram a lot.
Oh, Lord. So here's the deal. I'll give you a quick Kendrick Lamar precursor, so you'll be in the know with, you know, the modern world here.
People like listen to Bach, Beethoven.
You are very sophisticated, and then you watch Wheel of Fortune, but you have Beethoven on in the background.
This poor bastard didn't get any money today. But he's from India. Like, what the fuck are you doing on a fucking play on word show, dude?
Here's the quick deal on Kendrick Lamar. Like a lot of rappers, famous rappers, he comes from Compton, California. He's won 7 Grammys. He's on a song with Taylor Swift. He was in Time's top 100 most influential people last year. What? Billboard ranked him a top 10 rapper of all time.
What?
His new album, which came out last week, is projected to sell 500,000 copies this week and be the second biggest album of the year behind behind Drake, who I know you've heard of. And this is his third straight album to debut at number one on the Billboard charts.
Huh. Is Drake qualify as a rapper?
He sings a lot, and it's like auto-tune shit, but yeah, people consider him a rapper.
But, like, why do people give him any, like, street cred? Like, wasn't he on, like, fucking Disney Channel and stuff?
I don't think a lot of people give him street cred, but he's one of those that Kendrick Lamar's got street cred. Like, he's, like, a lyricist who, like, raps and has a message and talks about different stuff than just, like, you know, clubbing and drinking and popping Molly and shit like that. Like, he's got some real skill. Drake's more like pop and girls and kids, and people will be more apt to listen to him because he's got like a crossover appeal. But yeah, most people would consider Drake a rapper, I guess. But yeah, he was on some Nickelodeon show 20 years ago.
Did I ever tell a story about the girl at Hot Topic that gave me shit about rapping?
No. So but you should.
So I'm at Hot Topic, and I'm, because like as a grown man should be, I was looking for Superman T-shirts, and I'm standing there, I'm like looking at the wall of T-shirts as Brian was checking out with something, and I looked up and I saw a T-shirt and it said Yeezy on it, and I just said, "Who the fuck is Yeezy?" And this kind of this girl, like this little I know now, but this girl next to me, you know, high school, whatever, looks at me. She goes, "He's a rapper." I go, "A rapper?" She goes, "Yeah, you know, a guy that raps." And I just said, "I know what a rapper is." I was like, "Oh my god!" He's like, "How old do I fucking look to you? You think I've never heard rap music?" No, I know it. I just didn't know the name.
Right.
Ugh. That's like, ugh, I hate kids.
Speaking of someone a lot of people hate. Aaron Hernandez, after being acquitted for a double murder last week, committed suicide in his prison cell.
He didn't.
You don't think so? You think he was killed and then somebody hung him?
I am almost guarantee he was killed.
Okay.
Because I've been thinking about it, like, why would he kill himself now?
Like, he's a weird, but he just, weird human being.
Yeah, but there's a lot. Like, I understand.
Do you think he's a rational thinker?
I understand that. You go to jail, you're like, fuck this, I'm going to kill myself. That makes total sense. I'd be in jail for like a week, I'd be like, no, I'll just kill myself. I don't want to get raped. Like, I'm just not doing this. It's just time to die. And you look ahead.
You think you would get raped a lot in jail?
I don't know. But you'd think probably. Yeah, I'd be like, hey, I'm a lawyer. You guys want to have some help? Oh, you're okay. Oh, my God. But, like, you know, I can see you're looking forward. You go, I got the rest of my life. I'm never going to get out of here. It gets you fine. but you just were found not guilty of a murder, and that actually clears your path towards possible freedom someday. Like, it makes it a lot more likely that you're going to be free, as opposed to, you know, if you've been convicted of that, you've for sure been doomed. So you just like, got, like, the best news you've had in a long time, and you celebrate by, like, you feel guilty now? Like, nah, it seems a lot more likely to me that people found out, like, the guy he killed was probably had, like, a gang or something like that in the prison. When they found out that he was getting found not guilty for it, they went in there and they just paid off a guard, and the guard's like, yeah, I don't give a shit, he's a murderer, and they killed him.
Why not just say, people get murdered in prison, why not just say...
Oh, because if you're the guards, you don't want to let that one happen. Like, that's a high-profile inmate who just would, you know, if there's any guy in the prison that should be quote-unquote protected, you don't want to hear about, like, him getting shanked. Because then you got to go through a trial.
Doesn't that shit happen all the time, though?
Yeah, but it doesn't happen on TV. Like, it doesn't happen in the news. Like, if Aaron Hernandez was killed, people would want to know who did it. They'd be kind of interested in the trial of that guy. And,
Wasn't Jeffrey Dahmer, like...
Yeah, and that guy, you know, that guy kind of got in trouble. And that guy was also nuts. Aaron Hernandez is, you know, he's involved in gang stuff. Like, high-profile gang dudes, they are aware that they're targets. Like, Jeffrey Dahmer, people are just afraid of him. And even then, he was isolated for, like, the vast majority of his days. And, you know, again, people were interested in that. They wanted to see what happened. I'm guessing somebody killed Hernandez, and somebody's just like, nope, we're hiding this one, and we're going to let it go. And no one's going to cry. Even though it does suck, like, you got sentenced to life. You didn't sentence to death. You shouldn't just let people get murdered and just be like, eh, well, he's just a prisoner, and look the other way.
Yeah, his story is one of the most bizarre, for me, in sports, like, in my lifetime, because he was really, really good at football. Like, he was a Pro Bowl tight end on a team that already had Rob Gronkowski. Like, that's insane. But on top of it, he was, like, out of fucking control. Like, I don't know as far as, like, national press and stuff, but you listen to, like, sports radio around here and you hear some of the stories about him, like, just getting in fights at clubs and being on PCP and just smoking weed. Like, I forget how much weed he went through, like, on a daily basis, but, like, the fact he never popped for anything in the NFL, and he got away with, like, multiple shootings. Like, they were saying he was involved, like, even when he was in college playing for the Gators in Florida, like, he might have been involved in, like, a double shooting in Gainesville. There's a 2012 Boston double homicide he's involved with, a 2013 Miami shooting. He was convicted of the Odin Lloyd murder. He's just, like, a maniac. And the fact that he could still be so good at football with all this other shit going on the side, and is, like, he supposedly had, like, major paranoia. He got into a couple fights in the locker room with other Patriots players. It's like he was still an incredible football player with all that crap going on when millions of people play football and can never, like, tie up his cleats, you know?
Oh, it is insane, the gulf between... I mean, it's probably the same gulf between regular people and almost anyone in the NFL, but then between guys like him that, again, he was like 27 or whatever when he died. Like, in 5 years, he became, you know, he went from kind of obscurity in college to Super Bowl champion, I think. I think he won the Super Bowl. But, you know, the best tight end maybe in the game. He had $30 or $40 million in guaranteed money coming his way. And yet, yeah, he's doing all these drugs the whole time, and he still was, like, in that gang lifestyle. Like, it shows, again, it's like anything. A lot of rich people, they really don't care about money. They're motivated by different things in life. And you see, again, he had all the money in the world. He could have got out of it. I'm sure it wasn't easy, but you could have just, I'm sure, given the Latin Kings or whatever, like, here's $1 million, can I leave? Okay, bye. Or they would have all been like, oh, that's our boy, but... He's out there shooting people and just living that gangster gangbanging life or whatever. And it's not unique to him. It's all rich people. It's not just minority athletes or whatever, but it's just crazy. He's like a giant Manziel just with violence.
But most, like, gangbangers are multimillionaire 0.001% athletes. You know what I mean? Like, his story is...
Well, it's bizarre.
One in 100 million.
In basketball, it would be a lot more common. Like, you see a lot more of this in basketball. There's obviously a lot more shootings in basketball. It's because the game is so easy to tie into everyday life. Like, if you're really great, like, if you're a great basketball player, you're just balling out in the courts. And you're in front of everybody, you know everybody. The nature of the game lends itself to, you know, you're not recovering. Whereas with football, you're really disconnected from the fans. You know, you're wearing all these helmets and pads. You're really, like, you're living that military-style life where you're in the gym every day and you're pumping iron, you're doing all these things. It seems like it would be difficult for them to maintain, really, a social life. Like, I think that's what a lot of these athletes are only friends with other athletes. Whereas I think basketball, you get a lot more freedom from that. So, but still, it's just weird. You know, it's where you come from. A lot of these guys,
they can't get out of it. They just can't give it up.
And it's not just not giving it up, but like that's something they were bred with. Not like genetically, but like in that area where they're from, the way he's behaving is the right way to behave. That's the rational action, because. Where he's from, if you don't have anybody on your side, you're gonna die. So, you know, being in the only and loyalty is so important. Like, we look at this in like kind of, you know, gang, oh, they're whatever, but you just kind of think of it like in as far as like how England was in the medieval times and in the Middle Ages, Dark Ages, all that. Like, it's very similar. Like, you have to be loyal, and if you're not loyal, that's the worst thing you can be. And so they treasure loyalty above all else, because that same degree of loyalty that gets him in trouble now is probably what literally saved his life when he was 8 and 9 years old. Sad.
Yeah, Hernandez's lawyer agrees with you, by the way, and is disputing any claim of suicide and plans on initiating a full investigation into his death. I don't think that's going to go anywhere, but, I mean... Can they demand an autopsy or anything? Like, how?
I don't really. How does that work? I don't know offhand for like what the rights of family would have with the body now, because he is a prisoner. That said, I feel like there's probably just a law that, like, an automatic rule that if somebody in a prison dies from unusual circumstances, you have to do an autopsy.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine, especially something like this, where you just be like, well, we have to make sure, and I'm sure that one will be done, and it'll
but
come
if
back.
It comes out in the autopsy, he was stabbed and not hung.
Did
you say hung or hanged?
Hanged. I know.
It sounds so fucked up.
Yeah, I hanged
it. But I know if you say the guy was hung, you get a totally different image in your head, obviously.
Yeah, you do. Oh, yeah. Oh, George St. Pierre.
So, in the state of Massachusetts,
as I said that, there's two dudes on my screen lathering each other up in cream as they sweat. This is so gay.
In the state of Massachusetts, it's possible for Hernandez, through his attorneys, to request to have his murder conviction, the Odin Lloyd. So essentially, he was acquitted of this double murder, but he had to go back to jail because he was convicted for a different murder. So he was back in jail for life. He was serving a life sentence. So, in the state of Massachusetts, it's possible for Hernandez to request to have his murder conviction vacated due to his death. If that request were to be granted, Hernandez technically will have died an innocent man due to the legal principle of abatement ab initio. This principle asserts that when a criminal defendant dies but has not exhausted all legal appeals, the case reverts to its status at the beginning. Technically, the conviction is vacated, and the defendant is rendered innocent. Hernandez was in the process of filing an appeal for his 2015 conviction. So, granted, it doesn't mean shit because he's dead, but it could be a slap in the face of the family of the victim, and it could be a funny moment for Hernandez's family where they can say, oh, he's innocent. He was wrongly charged the second time and the first time.
Yeah, it's an odd one. Like, I actually kind of do follow the logic behind it because, you know, you're guilty, but if you're appealing it, in theory, you could have been innocent and you just got denied that because they're not going to, as a matter of law, they won't carry out the rest of the appeal. But, I mean, it, again, it, technically, it's just a, the most technical of technicalities here. It doesn't matter if you're Odin Lloyd family. Like, I understand people in that situation. It's tough to put yourself there. I don't know what you'd feel, but I can't imagine feeling like, oh, this is an insult to me. Like, the dude's dead. Like, it's not going to change anything. Like, literally nothing has changed. And you know that the world knew he was guilty. Like, this isn't an OJ situation. Like, he was guilty. It's the... It's a common law holdover from the 1600s. No one gives a shit. And if you're, it's a civil suit out there, I guess this, the only thing this would really impact in any way would be a civil suit, because the burden of proof in a civil suit is less than that in a criminal suit. And not that it would be completely dispositive, but it would be a lot of very easy evidence in a civil suit to be like, see, he was convicted of murder over here, and everybody would go, oh, yeah. It's probably the onus is on me now to rebut that. But now that he's technically, I hate this, innocent. To me, he's technically, because he's not, he actually is innocent. He's not, it's not that he's found not guilty. He's actually innocent. So, it's all going to be, it doesn't matter. It'll all be fine in the end for the people who are alive. And
I love when you talk for 5 minutes straight and then at the end just goes, it doesn't matter.
I know.
That's one of my favorite moves of yours. Serena Williams is 20 weeks pregnant. That's not the story, though. The story is this. She won the Australian Open at the end of January when she was 9 weeks pregnant. She's already considered the greatest women's tennis player of all time by most people. I like Steffi Graf personally, but a lot of people consider Serena the best ever. She just won a Grand Slam tournament against the very best tennis players in the world, carrying a child who wasn't just like, it wasn't like she was just conceived. This kid was already 9 weeks old, or this embryo, whatever you are at 9 weeks. She was 9 weeks pregnant with another being inside of her, like taking nourishment from her while she was beating the best tennis players in the world. This might be one of the greatest feats in sports history.
I guess, like...
It is. I'm telling you it is.
Like, when I heard this, like, when I first saw this reported, I was actually kind of confused at what point people were making. I was like, is it really impressive? Or are people like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she risked the baby doing that? Because, like, I don't think it really risks the baby. It's just running around. It's just exercise.
No, it doesn't risk the baby. No, I think it's the fact that she's older now, Serena. I mean, she's been a top tennis player since, like, 99. you know what I mean? People have known about her since the late 90s. And she's still probably the best women's tennis player in the world. And her run has been unbelievable. But to do it while pregnant is just like another level, especially at her age. And doing it at such an elite level for so long, it's mental. It's crazy.
Yeah, I guess.
What she's done in general is crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you're the best in the world at something ever in the history of the sport, that's something special, obviously. We were talking about Demetrius Johnson before, and she's at that level in tennis, but to do it pregnant is even another level that no man can ever do.
Yeah, I have no idea how the pregnancy would affect her at that time. I think some women would, some they wouldn't, I don't know. As far as her place, like, I know she's been so great for so long, and she's no doubt the greatest female tennis player ever. I don't know enough to say otherwise. I just, a lot of female accomplishments in athletics, I tend to just kind of, like, instinctively pull back, because it's the same deal as, like, Connecticut, the women won, like, 300 games in a row. Aren't they so dominant? And all I can think of is, it's more of an indictment in your competition. If you're in your, like, mid to late 30s and you're pregnant and you're still able to beat people, are you really that great, or are these other women just not very good?
I mean, tennis is a pretty international sport where people play it. Granted, in the state, it's not a number one sport in any country by any stretch. Like, I realize that, but it's played around the world, and I don't know.
It's basketball.
Okay.
And you still have these lopsided Kentucky... UConn Husky women's teams that win 100 games in a row. Mm-hmm. To me, it's just like, I think that the separation between the top women and the rest of them is really, really wide. Like, it just seems like there's, like, a couple women that just are dominant in everything, as opposed to in the men, when there's really not like that ever. Like, there's just so many guys that come and do well. So,
yeah, I mean, if you look at it historically, though, even it's like nobody can really match what she's done for as long as she's done it. Like, she won in 1999 the U.S. Open, and you're still talking about the greatest tennis players in the world. In 99, she was. Jesus, let's see.
She's 17 or something?
She was born in 81. So in 99, she would have been 18. And she's still winning tournaments at 35. It's like nobody has a run like that in any sport.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again,
you know what I mean?
It's like, pretty awesome. I mean, yeah, I got to give her all the credit for that. It's nuts. Again, amongst her peers and everything, yeah, she's lapping the field. To me, comparing her to the men, it's only kind of like, it's like the difference between six in a row for George St. Pierre and six in a row for Ronda Rousey. Like, I'm just going to think one of them is just going to be inherently more difficult, but she's still way ahead, yeah, separating herself from the pack.
I mean, there's something to that. I mean, during the same time period, Roger Federer would probably be her equivalent on the men's side. And, I mean, he set the Grand Slam record, and I don't know. It's hard to judge, but I just saw that story. I was like, holy shit. Like, the fact she won the Australian Open at 35 is pretty mind-boggling. Yeah. When some of these women are winning tournaments at 18, 19, 20 years old. And, like, I know you don't follow tennis, but back in, like, the mid-90s, there was all these, like, 16-year-old girls, like Martina Hingis coming up, who were winning Grand Slams, where it was like, how are these kids so much better than all these players in their mid-20s? And tennis was almost becoming a sport like gymnastics, where you peak at 18 and then you kind of fade out. But Serena hasn't had that at all. She's continued to be the best player in the world, even, you know, what you would think would be 12 years past her athletic prime in tennis. So
I think she's just much further ahead of everybody physically.
Yeah, she does look unusual. Yeah. I'm not professing that she's
she's a cheater.
Natural.
She's more man than woman.
I don't have evidence of that, but she does look muscular.
I guess a baby kind of contradicts that. Unless she has a son inside of her, then it's probably more man than woman now.
So Alex Jones is a topic we discuss here fairly often. I personally find him entertaining. I wouldn't consider him a news source personally, but I have watched his shtick on occasion and always get a good chuckle of it. His appearance on the Joe Rogan Experience was fun. He's in the middle of a court case to get custody of his kids. He's apparently getting divorced from his wife and wants the kids. Nothing unusual there, but his lawyer claimed that he was a performance artist yesterday or 2 days ago, but he disagrees with that, interestingly enough. He was quoted on his show today as saying, "If I put a top hat on and play the part of the head of Goldman Sachs saying, 'I'm screwing you over, I love the mega banks, I'm going to rob you, world government's good, I'm illustrating how George Soros and other people think of you,' I don't literally believe that." Jones specifically cited the time he painted his face like the Joker, and people got freaked out, he said, adding it was powerful. It was a powerful performance. That's why people were so freaked out. "You know, I keep thinking people are smart. This is the real me," Jones said. "The Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the Republic, changing the world, Brexit," Jones ranted. He went on to say, "We don't do pre-interviews. Ask anybody. We're the most bona fide, hardcore, real McCoy thing there is, and everybody knows it, and we're delivering the goods." Will this affect the likelihood of him getting custody of his kids?
No. I don't know, he wasn't going to get custody anyways.
If the lawyer's saying you're a gimmick, you're a performance artist, you're playing a character, whatever it might be, and then the next day you come out and essentially say the exact opposite, that you're the real deal and everyone else is fake – What are you doing?
No, I understand what you're saying. It doesn't seem to undermine it. It wouldn't help you, but I could also just see, if I'm a lawyer, I'm just going to be like, no, Your Honor, I told you. Again, it's performance art. Did he have a microphone in front of his face? Yeah. then it's performance art.
Like, so even what, like, the lawyer or whatever, or Jones on the stand could argue what he did today was part of his performance?
Yeah, basically, as long as he said on the stand, like, no, I understood what I was doing right there was part of the gimmick. I have to go out there and act like, you know, what I do is 100% real. But, you know, there's a degree of, you know, showmanship and bombacity to what I do, and which I think is fair. I don't think that he's... I think when he says things, he believes them to some degree. Like, he believes a lot of dumb shit, but he's got a... Like, it'd be really hard to fake all that as like, a sincere form of knowledge, because, you know, he knows a lot of shit. It's all weird shit to know, but it's not like it's facts he knows. But he knows a lot of myths or whatever. So, I think he obviously turns it up. He's kind of closer to a pro wrestler. Like, he's going through the motions. He's playing. He's amping up his character. Would he do some of these things? I don't know. I can't imagine anybody in the world's ever that angry for that long all the time. Like, you just have to die. Your blood pressure must be, like, I don't know what a bad blood pressure is, but it would be that number. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, he's an interesting character. Fox News has ended its association with Bill O'Reilly. He was basically fired today because of, like, multiple sexual harassment allegations and several sponsors pulling their advertising from his show because of said allegations. You know how I feel about O'Reilly. I'm not a fan, but personally, not a fan of people getting fired for things they're accused of and haven't been proven. I'd be okay with them forcing them to take a sabbatical or take some time off. Obviously, Fox is getting heat because of this, but it's like he hasn't been convicted of anything. What happened to innocent before proven guilty?
Well, that doesn't apply in the private world. That's just a legal standard.
I understand, but people can say anything. Like, it sucks you can get shit canned because people say shit.
I don't like the idea that somebody gets shit canned, yeah, for you know, words or whisper campaigns or whatever, but I think it's fair to look at a situation and go, well, you've paid over like $13 million. Probably hiding a little something here. Like,
I'm not saying he's innocent. I'm not saying that, but it's like, I don't know.
Like, I think there's
a fairness there that I don't fully feel is there, because people could accuse anybody of anything. Yeah. And granted, the evidence is mounting, and I get why they did it. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know. It's hard for me. Like, I think Bill Cosby probably raped women, but he hasn't been convicted on it. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. And it's the same thing with Trump. It's like he's been accused of stuff too, and nothing happens to him. There's just – it's inconsistent. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't – it doesn't really – again, I don't care. It doesn't matter. It's just all theater. They're going to bring in Tucker to his spot. It'll be fine. Right. All things come to an end.
You think Tucker can draw in that spot? I use wrestling lingo for everything, but
no, he's outdrawing Megyn Kelly.
Yeah,
like his ratings are pretty good. Like I enjoy Tucker for the most part. Like I appreciate him a lot more than I do Bill O'Reilly. Like to me, O'Reilly had like an actual. It reminded me of my dad a lot. Just a real anger there, where I think that Tucker is very, very much. I think he believes what he says and everything, but a lot of that's just performance art, like Alex Jones. Like there's just, I think Sean Hannity has a lot of that. Like I'm sure if you just went out for steak with Sean Hannity, you'd be like, oh, this is a nice guy to talk to. O'Reilly would probably always be on though. I could see him getting out of his limo or whatever and just like scoffing at little people and bullying them around and whipping his dick out at women, like I'm sure he apparently did. And
well, the scene where he's flipping out because of the teleprompter is like, to me, that's who he is.
Yeah.
I've heard stories like he would vacation on Nantucket or the Vineyard or something, and I've got friends who have worked down there, and he'd be like screaming into his cell phone, walking down this like quiet street on Nantucket, just ranting and raving into his phone. Like, and granted, it's secondhand stories, but it's just like I see him being like an angry angry dude and a bit of a bully and a hothead, which isn't my style by any stretch.
Yeah, there are certain guys like that. Like, I know somebody that worked in TV in L.A., and this person said that the biggest asshole by a country mile was Keith Olbermann. And when I hear that, I go, oh, yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Like, yeah. Keith Olbermann, the way he acts, like, he just must be insufferable to be around. But, you know, there's lots of other people. Like, Rachel Maddow, I have a feeling she's probably okay, you know, off screen. She's probably a little Lisa Simpson-y, but I bet you can, like, have dinner with her, and she'd be all right.
Yeah. I know you're not a big gamer, but have you heard about the trouble with PlayStation 4?
The cockroaches?
Yeah.
I did read that.
What is that about?
I guess...
But out of every system, why does PlayStation 4 attract cockroaches?
Apparently the slots for the cooling mechanism in the PS4 are larger and wider than those on, like, Xbox. And there's also more, there's like some other secondary thing inside of the PS4 that creates like a more natural nesting area for them.
So there's stores that have amassed garbage bags full of dead roaches when doing repair work. One store even charges a $25 roach fee to clean infested machines.
I can guarantee you the number of gamers who've gone to that place and seen roach fee and were confused as shit is very high.
They probably were. That is very true. But I'm reading a little more about it right now. I guess the PS4's internal power supply fries roaches onto its components, which can stop the PS4 from turning on. It's so weird.
Lovely.
But it's weirder that even, like, this hasn't been an issue with smaller bugs. Like, why wouldn't a smaller bug crawl into a Xbox or something?
They might.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, maybe they do and just, you know, nobody knows because they're too small to do any damage. You know, a cockroach is pretty freaking big. That's a pretty fucking big little figure thingy there. So you don't want to fuck around with that.
This article I'm reading from Fox News about it says, first and foremost, there's two tips they give you at the end of this article. First and foremost, at the risk of stating the obvious, keep your house tidy. Second, store your PS4 in an open area with good airflow high off the ground. Like, what are you going to do, put your PlayStation up on a ladder?
Like, these are gamers. What the hell? Their shit's on the floor and everything around them is dirty. They live like I do. I'm surprised I don't have roaches. We don't really have bugs here. I don't know why.
Like, in Chicago or in
the
home?
Like, the suburbs tend to... I think it's probably just the construction of the homes and stuff like that. Like, they're pretty good at keeping out bugs. But New York, they got all those, like, you know... apartments, and just so much easier for bugs to get into places.
Have you ever heard of cicadas?
Yeah, we have the 17-year cicadas here.
Yeah, so do we. Okay.
You don't have the same ones, though.
Okay. I didn't realize you were so knowledgeable on cicadas.
Yeah, it's a big Chicago thing. Like this area of the Midwest, like just that Lake Michigan area, there's a certain type of cicada that comes every two decades or whatever. It's like the only place on the planet that they exist. And then we have annual cicadas as well, but it's some weird thing, and like you can just tell because it's just the deafening cicada chirp for three straight months in the summer. It's crazy.
Yeah, we get them every 17 years here too, and it is bizarre because I remember it was probably maybe 5 years ago. Like I've got my house is kind of on a hill, so in the backyard up. On the top of the hill, we've got some woods between our house and the house behind us. And they were all flying up in the trees. Like, you could see them, like, thousands of these things. And it's like they come out every 17 years. And I can remember them as a kid, too, like, riding my bike and they'd be in the road. Like, I can remember as a kid. And then, again, this most recent time. And they are big and weird. And then they disappear for 17 years and come back. It's a bizarre animal unlike any other.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, I don't really, like, I don't like bugs. And I'm not saying like I like touching them or anything, but they don't. They're not as creepy as other bugs for some reason. I don't know. It's like when the cicadas show up, it's like it's almost like this weirdly mystical type of like deal. Like you know, like if we're in like the 1800s or 1700s, like these bugs just show up out of nowhere and you wouldn't know what's going on. It'd be kind of like this creepy omen, and then like the headless horseman would show up or something.
Yeah, I can remember them like destroying the leaves too. Like in my backyard, they would chomp on the leaves and stuff. I think they eat sap too or something.
They're like the plot device for a bad M. Night Shyamalan movie. Every 17 years, they show up and eat everything.
M. Night Shyamalan started off good and then just fell apart, didn't he?
Yeah, it's because the dude doesn't direct. He only wants to direct shit he writes. He's a great director. He just needs better scripts.
He didn't write The Sixth Sense?
No, he wrote that.
You didn't like that?
No. He started out great. Now he's just... He had a couple of really good ideas, and he executed them well. He still has all this amazing like visual talent, but yeah. I don't think his writing talent is good enough to be like a true long-term writer.
Yeah. What was the one where like the trees were killing everyone? Remember that with Marky Mark?
Like,
I still call him Marky Mark. Mark Wahlberg.
That may have been The Happening.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah. Marky Mark curbed an Asian kid. Like, he almost killed, like, he was, like, arrested. Like, he was, like, doing, like, felony time. Like, Marky Mark was, like, he was just a horrible Southie piece of garbage.
And that now he... owns hundreds of restaurants and is a multimillionaire.
He owns restaurants?
Yeah, Wahlburgers. Yeah.
I think I've heard... Oh, I didn't know that was his.
Yeah. Yeah, the one of the brothers... Obviously, I know a lot about the Wahlbergs living in Massachusetts, but I think, like, there's 9 kids in the family, and obviously there's Donnie and Mark, who are big-time actors. Then another brother, I can't think of his name off the top of my head, was, like, a chef. And when Marky Mark and Donnie started making some money, they invested in a couple of restaurants essentially for him. And then, like, they've basically got a chain of these burger restaurants now that are expanding pretty quick.
That sounds like something out of The Simpsons, like the name The Wahlburger. Like, it's just such a corny, like, we're going to have a national chain of our B-list celebrities. But it's like this big chain of, like, hamburger joints of a celebrity. Like, it actually kind of worked for some reason.
Yeah, M. Night Shyamalan just shit the bed. Like, I'm looking at this. It's like, he started out with, you know, The Sixth Sense and Signs
like,
and Unbreakable. And then I remember The Village. I'm like, yeah, this was kind of weird. Not that great. And since then, I haven't even... Yeah, I actually saw Devil. That was bad. That was one where they were in the elevator or something. Yeah. Like, I remember that vaguely. And the rest of the stuff I haven't even seen.
Like, even in this really shitty movie, like Lady in the Water, that movie wasn't good at all, but there's one scene with Paul Giamatti, it was one of, like, the best scenes I've ever seen. Like, it's just like a solo shot of Giamatti crying, but the emotion what Shyamalan brought out of him was really great. So, like, again, he's got a lot of real good talent as a director. He's just a shit writer. It happens.
Yeah.
Not everyone goes to Yale.
Not everyone. Are you prepared for Yale? When do you have to go?
June 2nd, I will arrive.
Oh, it's still 2 months away.
No, well, it's almost the 20th. Tomorrow's the 20th.
6 weeks, whatever.
Yeah, it's getting closer, yeah. But, no, everything's paid for. I got to straighten out something. Something's weird on my thing. But I got my flight out there.
That would be a good drop. There's something weird on my thing.
I'll just take the penicillin. It'll go away. But you know, I got a great flight to New York. Like, I go to fly to New York, and then I think I'm going to take a bus because the bus is 2 hours and a train is 2 hours, but the bus is like $12. So I'm like, whatever. But because I'm flying out there, I get to fly on JetBlue, like a real airline. Like a nice one.
What do you normally fly? Spirit or something weird?
Spirit or Frontier. Like, I never fly
I've never even heard of Frontier.
Exactly.
Sounds good.
It flies a lot to Denver.
That's right.
It's a mountain type of airline. It's regional. It's like or Southwest if I'm feeling lucky. Like, if I have some extra money, I'll fly Southwest as opposed to Spirit. So, like, JetBlue's, like, a real, like, I'm like, oh, look at complimentary Wi-Fi and this and that. I'm like, this is the fancy airplane. Oh, look at that. It's only $20 more. Thanks a lot, New York.
If several police come on the plane and tell you you need to get off it, will you get off?
Yeah. I'm not a dick. I'm a fucking grown man. I don't cry like a child having a terrible twos temper tantrum. Like, I don't give a fuck how angry you are. You're a grown man. You don't get dragged off an airplane crying and wailing. Like, I wouldn't expect that behavior out of you if you just heard that your wife died. Like, that's how, like, you react in movies if you're watching your daughter get raped. You react that way. Not just because you have to get on a different fucking airplane, you dickhead.
Yeah. I mean, you... If you had to guess where I fell on that, you would probably think I would be on the side of the passenger. I'm not at all in this circumstance because...
You hate customers.
No, I like customers. They pay the bills. The plane already had enough customers on it, so you didn't need him. But here's the thing. It's not his plane. If he owned the plane, he'd have a right to be on it. But it's like anybody. You can refuse anybody service, and you can... When a police officer tells you to do something, it wasn't like it was a United stewardess telling him to leave. These were police officers.
Yeah.
They tell you to do something, you fucking do it. Just like if you get pulled over, it's, yes, sir, here's my whatever, my license, my registration. Yeah, I think I probably was going a little too fast. I'm sorry. I was trying to get wherever. You be nice, and you do what they ask you to do. Because you don't want to get beat up, you don't want to get arrested, you don't want to get dragged off the plane. Just be normal. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it sucks the plane was oversold. It sucks that he got taken off that way, but he didn't have to. He could have just got off the plane, like what 99% of normal people would have done in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that you're upset. I hate the airlines. I hate that they overbook. I think it's horseshit. I don't like it. I understand this is somewhat out of their hands. Like, the four seats are negotiated by unions and things like that. Like, it's a perk, but United knows that, and I know that making a profit on a flight, apparently, like, they only make a profit on most flights of about 10 people. Like, it's just such an expensive endeavor. Still, like, if this dude had played it right, he would have walked out of there with a first-class seat, a hotel for the night, and, like, $1,000 in his hand. Instead, he acted like a dickhead, and he... You know, the cops don't fuck around with dickheads. You don't beat the cops. And it sucks, but it's kind of like, it's like whenever people, like, complain that they're being racially profiled, it's like, yeah, you're absolutely right. That sucks. I wouldn't want that to happen. And if the cop is racially profiling you, it sucks to have to take it. But you can be right, and he'll put you in jail, or you can just keep your mouth shut, and you don't go to jail. Like, right. Even if, yes, you'll be right, and maybe that helps you feel good. I'll be, like, a coward and not in jail. Like, you know, when the guy with the gun says to do something, you're just going to do it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially when you're on an airplane. Are you kidding me? Like, if I'm a passenger on that plane, I see this dickhead, I'm going to be like, I would not fly in a plane with him. If they said, oh, we're going to let him on and we're gonna take somebody else off, I'd be like, I want off this plane because this dude is unstable. He's going to do something on the plane.
Yeah, that was quite the story. It was funny because United, like, lost $1 billion or something in, like, a day. Like, the stockholders or everything lost money, and, like, now the stocks are back to normal. It's like, it was one of those stories that just blew up, was crazy for a couple of days, and nobody's going to remember. And I don't think anybody's going to boycott United if they have the most convenient, cheapest flight available.
Oh,
nobody's going to go... Do you know what I mean? Nobody's going to go to Delta and pay an extra $50 for their ticket at a shittier time. I personally don't think it's going to really hurt United at all, despite all the media and the hype that surrounded that thing.
No, it'll go away. It's just it's a great story because it had that secondary life when everybody found out that the dude's, like, had been suspended as a doctor, and, like, there's enough salacious details on him that you're like, oh, there's something new to hear about. And then everybody argues, should we really be doing that? Do you give up your privacy? Blah, blah, blah. It's like there was just a lot of talking points involved in it. So, like, I understood it became a little fun story for the internet. But, yeah, it'll go away. Like, it's amazing that we have what we have when it comes to airplanes. Like, the idea that one person pays like $1,000 in first class, and I'll pay like $80 in the coach. If we get there the same time, like, that's really cool. Like, and we've made flying so fucking cheap that anybody can fly. Like, you can work a minimum wage job, and you can afford an airplane ticket to a lot of places. And I don't know. I think people should just shut up. And, like, if you want it to be nicer and all these things, you're going to have to pay more. You can have fewer people on the plane and more guarantees and all that. You're going to pay $800 a round-trip ticket instead of $80. I'd rather pay $80. I'm just crazy like that.
Yeah, and to me, the bottom line is, like, when we flew to Florida a couple weeks ago, it was like, it wasn't necessarily cheap. I mean, I think each ticket was like $300 or whatever round trip with four of us, you know, shit adds up. But we got there and, like, literally we were in the air like 2 hours and 45 minutes to get to Orlando as opposed to driving in a car for 21 hours straight. Yeah, you're uncomfortable for a few hours and it costs some money, but the benefits outweigh the negatives for sure.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just magic. We get in a tiny little metal tube, and 2 hours later, we're in a totally different place. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, 50 degrees warmer. It's stupid. Anyway, anything else going on in the world that you need to get off your chest?
No, nothing.
Nothing? All right. Well, thank you for listening to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. I don't think we plugged the show or the site at all in these last 2.5 hours. So there's the one plug. There's no bullshit on the show. Just all news, all facts, all information, no advertising. It can't get much better than that.
Advertising would be good, though.
Someday.
Yeah.
Talk to you next week.
I'm finished.
Hi everyone, I'm Mike Coughlin for HalfGuarded.com. If anybody's actually listening to this part, I'll be surprised. But I realized, as a practicing attorney, I should probably mention somewhere, like they do in the movies, the motion pictures, that everything you've heard is exclusive copyright and trademark and every other legal designation permitted within the United States or any other good country. HalfGuarded.com owns everything you just heard. Nobody else does. If they stole it from us, I will find you, and I will kill you, because I have a special set of skills. Also, anybody that's listening to this, email mike@halfguarded.com. I've never really used email, but I can get shit from it. If you've actually heard this, I'm not kidding, I will send you $5 via PayPal. I'm really curious to see if anybody in the world will ever fucking hear this. Five fucking dollars for somebody. I'll probably do it for everybody that listens, unless it gets out of control, and then I'll just delete this part. But until that time comes, everything you heard is property of the halfguarded.com website. Bye. Oh, and yes, I'm aware that putting in a copyright thing at the end of a podcast where I've probably stolen music from somebody else is weird, but I promise to pay those artists if they ever request it. HalfGuarded.com. Go!